We'll call, it's 9 o'clock, we'll call the meeting to order. Do we have any updates to the agenda?
To you, Mr. Chair, we would like to add an emergent item pertaining to a personnel matter as agenda item K3.
Could I get a motion to add a new item to the agenda, K3?
I'll make that motion for K3 to add to the agenda.
All in favor? Now, could I get a motion to accept the agenda as amended?
I move to accept the agenda as amended.
He's a keener, isn't he? All in favor? That is carried. Confirmation of minutes for January 23rd, 2018 council meeting.
I'd like to make a motion to accept the meetings of the January 23rd minutes of the January 23rd council meeting.
All in favor? That is carried. Let's go to item D1.
Motion to open?
It's not a hearing.
Oh.
You guys are all ready to go this morning. Give her.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Reeve, members of council. My name is Angie Keibel. I'm the manager of legislative and legal services. I'm here today to speak on D1, which is a response to a notice of motion for creation of a voters list. So we're going to talk about a few things today with this report. I'm going to give you some of the history of what's happened with voters list discussions at Rocky View County. We're going to talk about the types of voters lists that are available under the Local Authorities Election Act. We're going to talk about some of the benefits and challenges with voters lists in general. We're going to talk about fraud a bit and the 2017 election and the next steps should council decide to implement a voters list. So some of the history with voters lists, provincially and federally, there was a movement in the past few decades from enumeration to a permanent voters list. So the difference between enumeration and a permanent list, enumeration must happen before each election, whereas a permanent voters list is updated on a regular basis and the electors list is pulled from that permanent voters list. To my knowledge, no Alberta municipalities currently use a voters list for their election purposes. In response to then-Councillor Arshinoff's notice of motion, administration on behalf of council submitted a resolution to the AAMDC, which is the Association of Alberta Municipal Districts and Counties. This resolution identified obstacles to the lists of electors, some of those obstacles that exist to Alberta municipalities right now are the requirement for mandatory door-to-door enumeration of residents, the inability to access the provincial list of electors without an enumeration, as well as the lack of legislative guidance and best practices for municipalities. So that's right now with the AAMDC. We've also been advised, I believe members of council attended the Central Alberta Municipal Districts and Counties session, which was a couple weeks ago, and we're informed by officials at the province that there is a Local Authorities Election Act review planned, and that'll likely be completed in 2019. So the AAMDC resolution will be part of that review, which again is scheduled to begin in 2019. So what's the difference between a permanent list of electors versus just a list of electors? So normally what you would do if you wanted to start with a permanent list of electors is the municipality would do door-to-door enumeration. So you'd go from each resident in Rocky View County and determine who lives there and gather the personal information from them at that time. This list would then be maintained by the municipality. And you can make an agreement with the provincial chief electoral officer to share this information back and forth. So the provincial electoral officer would share information with Rocky View County, and Rocky View County would share information back as to when people change residences, move in or out of the municipality. Some of the personal information that the electors list requires you to collect include the address of the resident, the name, their phone number, gender, birthday, date of Alberta residency, and whether they are supporters of the public school or the separate school. So some of the benefits and challenges to a voter's list. So a benefit to voters is at the voting station, it provides another option to verify eligibility. So currently, if you arrive at a voting station, there are several ways to verify that you are eligible to vote. County residents find this particularly difficult because a lot of residents have PO boxes, so they don't have a street address on their ID, for example. So this would provide another option for voters to verify their eligibility to say, look, my name's on the list, therefore I'm entitled to vote in this division and in this election. It would create efficiencies at the voting station in that it would likely be quicker to hand out the ballots. So once we've verified you're on the list, we can provide you with a ballot. For election campaigns, each person who is running for election can obtain a copy of the voters list and use that list for campaigning. So then you'd know who is in your division and campaign accordingly. It would also provide real-time data collection. Another benefit is the temporary full-time work for up to 20 people to actually do the enumeration, and probably permanent employment on a regular basis to maintain the database. There is increased risk of a privacy breach because we are collecting information that we'd never had before and handing it out to each candidate at the election. Fair elections, of course, are the cornerstone of democratic government. And voting fraud and election fraud can erode that public trust in fair elections. So there's different types of voting fraud. One, where the voter does not participate. So this includes ghost voting and ballot stuffing. And two, where the voter does participate, at least in some fashion. So that includes vote buying, voter intimidation, voting where not allowed, multiple voting, those sorts of things. A voter's list would reduce the risk of voting where not allowed and multiple voting. But in researching for this report, there are quite a few reports on the risks of voter registration fraud, in that people could submit fictitious names or provide false information. The penalty for any type of fraud under the Local Authorities Election Act is a $10,000 fine and or 6 months imprisonment. So it's a strict liability offense. So if Rocky View County did decide to implement a voters list, the first thing to do would be to decide whether you wanted to have a permanent voters list or an ad hoc one. So just before the election, you can collect the ad hoc list, or you can create a permanent voters list and keep it updated in between each election. Second step would be to create and adopt a bylaw that would lay out these things. Third, you need to negotiate agreement with the province to share information, or you could, I should say, negotiate that agreement. Four, establish policies, procedures, and standards. Design and build a database, and then actually complete the enumeration, and then maintain and do quality assessment of the database. So in conclusion, there are benefits and challenges to creating a voters list right now. The provincial government is looking at an update to the Local Authorities Election Act. If the changes allow the municipality to use information from the provincial electors list, the cost and administration would go way down for Rocky View County. As a result, we're recommending that this wait until the review is completed, and depending on the changes, consider implementing a voters list at that time. Thank you. I'm available for questions.
We have Councillor Shule.
First question I got is, when I was looking under the province website, it says that the chief electoral officer may also provide information from the registry elections and to municipalities for the purpose of compiling revised respect lists to registers of electors, which means the CAO can go to the province and ask for that list of no charge. So
that's correct, and that's after you've completed an enumeration. So first step would be to do an enumeration of your own residents, and then you could update based on information from the chief electoral officer.
that's not what I was getting. I was the understanding that you can go to the provincial and federal government and ask for the voters list. So why would we have to go to door-to-door if we can do it this way?
So that's, again, that's one of the things that the AMDNC resolution seeks, is to be able to go directly to the provincial government and get that list rather than doing an enumeration. So currently, that is the first step, is a provincial, or sorry, a municipal enumeration. And we're anticipating, based on the cost of a census, that it would cost likely upwards of $130,000 for Rocky View County to do that enumeration.
Well, that's the part I'm really confused on. You're saying it's going to cost us $130,000 to just to go to the province and the federal government to ask for their list?
So the first thing, like I say, I know it reads that way. It looks like you can just go and say, please, Mr. Chief Electoral Officer of the province, share your list with us so we can use it for the election. My understanding of the legislation, and that's backed up by the AMDC resolution, is that first you must complete your own enumeration. And then you can go and get it updated through the Chief Electoral Officer's discussions. So again, I don't think a voters list is a bad idea. I think we just need to wait until the Local Authorities Election Act is revised.
Well, I was just, that's my next question, unless you know something that I don't know or I couldn't find out. When is there going to be a revised to the Electoral Act from the province? But the understanding is not even on the horizon.
So my understanding was that and I wasn't at the CAMDNC, so perhaps someone else who was there could speak to it, but one of these speakers there apparently advised, which they do every election, that they do a Local Authorities Election Act revision after the election, and that usually happens within the year after. So we're anticipating 2019, they will at least start, and the next election is scheduled for 2021 for municipal.
Can I get verification? My mind tells me, and actually Al Camry, the president of the AAMDNC, told me yesterday he thought our resolution didn't pass. Did it pass at the convention?
Yes, it did, and it's actually in your agenda package. You'll notice it's appended, I believe.
That's what Councillor Hansen just told me, but I...
Yes, so if you look to page 10 of 13 in your resolution, or in your agenda package, it does include that it was accepted in principle, the AMDC resolution.
Thank you. Councillor Wright.
Through the reeve to Ms. Keibel. I'm going to continue on with where Councillor Shule left off there. When I read, and anybody else I've asked, and I actually called elections, municipal affairs yesterday, and just in regards to what the AAMDC states in their review, is that in response to what our motion was, that we were going to do an enumeration? Because it doesn't seem to speak to having to do an enumeration. 49.1b prescribes procedures and forms governing the enumeration of electors and any other methods of compiling and revising a permanent electors registry. And then 49.2a goes on to receive from... if a bylaw is enacted under subsection 1, the municipality may enter into an agreement with its chief electoral officer under the Election Act, A, to receive from the chief electoral officer information that will assist the secretary of the municipality in compiling or revising the permanent electors register. That, to me, indicates that we can get their list. And also, the feds have also said that we can have their list as well. So can I just, again, further clarification on that? Because when I read the AAMDC thing, it seems to be in direct response to the fact that we're asserting that we're going to do an enumeration. Could that be potentially why they've come back with that response and where the confusion is lying?
Could you rephrase the question?
Not really. In our AMDC, what it states there, it says that, just give me a second
here. So I can read it for you if you'd like, that the Alberta Association of Municipal Districts and Counties requests the Government of Alberta to amend the Local Authorities Election Act to provide municipalities a practical and economical option to use a list of electors for proof of electorate eligibility. And one of the points is that the obstacles are that the mandatory requirement of a door-to-door enumeration.
Where does it say that in the LAEA is what I'm getting at? Or was that an assumption that they took that we were going to go door-to-door, and so therefore to back us up on the door-to-door aspect of that, were they then supporting us by saying, if this is what you want to do, then we'll look at that? Or is that something that the county initiated and the province is responding to, the fact that it sounds like we want to do an enumeration? Could it be that?
I couldn't speak to their motivations and
because nothing, but there's nothing in the LAEA that speaks to us having to do an enumeration. It outlines the procedures doing it, but an enumeration can just be getting the list from the province, can it not?
My interpretation is that it requires a door-to-door enumeration at this point, which is something that the AMDC resolution is attempting to remedy. And once it does, then I think the voters will still be much more economical.
So that's your personal interpretation, or is that how it...
That's my legal interpretation.
Okay. All right. And then, so there were some... I just got some clarifications in terms of information that's gathered from when you do an enumeration process. Absolutely, you can get that. Those are maximums that are prescribed in the local LAEA. We'll just keep it at that, make it simple. But they don't have to be on what's distributed on the voters list, correct? We can put minimums. We could just put a name and an address on our voters list. We don't have to put people's date of birth. We don't have to put people's phone numbers. And so this, I think it's a little bit misleading to say that it's a privacy issue, unless, of course, we're concerned that the county can't keep it private, and we're worried about documents being leaked. But I'm thinking if that's the case, then why would municipalities throughout Canada? I was doing a lot of research. There's a lot of provinces that do them in municipalities. Mm-hmm. I lived in Toronto many years ago, and I voted in a municipal election, and they had voters lists back then. As well, if it's not a privacy concern for the province or for the feds, how come it's a privacy concern for Rocky View County?
So in speaking to the concern for a privacy breach, my concern is always that there's an opportunity for a breach. Not that it won't happen. Of course, we would put in place very strict mitigation procedures to ensure that there's no leakages internally. The risk, of course, is that as soon as the election is called, that voters list can go to any candidate who has signed up to run for the election. So again, it's a risk that may not happen, hopefully doesn't happen. And the consequence is for the individual who does the leaking, there's a penalty in the Local Authorities Election Act. There's quite a serious penalty for that, for sharing information inappropriately from a voter's list. But the likelihood, again, I like to think the best of people and that information won't be leaked, but as soon as you collect it, you've increased your risk of a leak. Before that, we didn't have it.
But there are lists available now that people can buy. As you know, in the last election, I know in my division, people were calling to make sure people were going to go out to vote. So there's definitely lists available, and a lot of those phone numbers were unlisted phone numbers. So those lists are there. So I don't know if I can really sort of buy into the privacy thing, especially considering that the province and feds.
If I could just rephrase that, what you're saying is that you think the likelihood of a privacy breach is low and the consequences are low. And so the risk is there. I think that's no question. But the likelihood and the consequences low. Is that fair to say?
Fair enough. I'll pass the mic up and come back in a bit.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions.
Councillor McKeiler, go ahead.
Thank you, Reeve Bolke. Through the chair. All right. Holy moly. All right. I have several questions here. Can you tell me what ghost voting is?
Ghost voting is when people who have passed away are deemed to have voted. So, you know, that their name still appears on the voting list, even though they're no longer of this realm. And so somebody votes on their name.
Okay. So a couple more. I'm going to go back to the requirement for the enumeration in a second here. But how far ahead of an election would we want to do a enumeration?
So that depends, through the chair to Councillor McKeiler. That depends a bit on whether you want to do a permanent list of electors or an ad hoc list of electors. So the rules for an ad hoc list of electors, and I don't have the act in front of me, but I believe it's you have to do it within 6 months of the election. So that would be triggered in 2021. If Rocky View County wants to do a permanent list of electors, my recommendation would be to, again, wait until the review is completed, but then get on it quite quickly, because, again, it's going to require the creation of databases, quality controls, hiring of staff. It's an administrative undertaking for sure.
Okay. And how is it kept up to date? So under what mechanisms would we track that? Would we know when people move in and out, when we know when someone turns 18, especially in light of not collecting a date of birth, mm-hmm. as Councillor Wright has asked about? So how would we do that?
Mm-hmm. So through the chair, the actual best practices for how we would maintain a database, how we would collect the information, how we would be triggered, don't exist in Alberta, unfortunately, because we don't have any municipalities doing it right now. That's one of the asks that the AMDNC resolution has, is that municipalities are given a bit more guidance as to those types of questions. Off the top of my head, I would think they would be self-triggered. So when you're moving in or out, that would be something that you would let your municipality know that you're no longer on that voting register or you're new to the voting register. But as far as the efficiency or the accuracy of those types of updates, I couldn't say. The other trigger, I think, would be having an agreement with the provincial government to share the permanent electors list information. So when they're triggered with a move in or out of the division, then we would be triggered as well.
Because I think that there's a gap between, you know, people who pay property taxes, for example, and people who rent in the municipality, because we don't have any visibility to those folks whatsoever. And then folks that have property in the municipality but don't necessarily live within the division they have property in. So I think, again, I'm a little unclear about how we make sure that it's as accurate as you know, like... To me, there's value in this, but if it's 60% accurate and we still have a bunch of gaps, I'm not sure that we've actually addressed some of the fundamental issues. I'm thinking about a resident card. I remember, you know, turning 18 in Alberta and went to ALCB and got my little I Can Drink card. So,
which was fantastic. I don't recall that, Councillor McCallum.
Yeah, so I'm just throwing that out there. I was short. Everybody thought I was 12 forever. So under the Permanent Electors Register under Section 49(1) of the Local Elections Act, it does seem to read into, that step one is this, which is an enumeration. Step two is the voters list. It doesn't say or, but it doesn't say and either. So I guess some clarity there would be great, and I will... And I think, again, if from a date of birth, I think that needs to be collected so we know when people are actually 18.
Thank you. Councillor Kissel.
Through the Reeve, just looking at the budget implications. So we've approved $130,000 for our census. Is there no way we can tie those together? We're already out there. We're knocking on doors. We're already annoying our residents. Can we not do it one time? Because we're already there.
I couldn't give you an opinion on that on the spot. Oh, sorry, through the chair. I couldn't give you an opinion on the spot on that. My gut is telling me that they're quite distinct legislatively. They're under different acts. The other difficulty that we have with a census is people actually answering us. So one of the things that we do with the census, which I don't think we could do with the voters list, is you can collect information from... someone calling or actually using their PIN and entering their how many people are in the dwelling. At the very last resort, you can even ask the neighbor how many people live in that house next door, which a voters list, obviously, that wouldn't work for. So, again, I couldn't give you a definitive opinion on that. I can get back to you with that if you'd like, but my gut is telling me that it's unlikely to be able to connect those two.
Okay, and we spoke of fraud. So there's a couple things I wanted to talk about is scrutineers. I scrutineered myself. And when you're asked to speak, to stand on the other side of the room, away as far as you can from everything, I could have stayed home. Because there's no value to that. And the last thing is that at my polling station, we did have two people that were from out-of-province vote. And that has moved forward. But at the same time, we allow people to come and vote, even though they don't have ID. They say they live in the province for 3 years. And they bring a power bill because their adult children live there. And we let them vote. So obviously the system we have is not working well because it doesn't deter people. So if we have a voters list, would that not eliminate some of those problems? Because then people who do not live in our province would not feel they have that right.
So going back to the idea of fraud, as I said, the multiple voting, the voting where you're not allowed, is certainly an issue, and one that we've identified, obviously, in Rocky View County, at least in one instance, or two instances, I suppose. Having a voters list would not necessarily prevent fraud, just to be clear. It would provide another opportunity for someone who is not... who doesn't have a driver's license, who doesn't have a power bill. If they're on the list, they'd be able to vote, right? So they wouldn't necessarily have to have an address on their ID. They would just need to prove that they are who they are and their name is on the list. So the correction of the multiple voting, if we still have more than one voting station, they could still vote multiple times. The correction of the people from out of town coming in to vote, again, there's different issues with voter registration fraud. So what I'm trying to say is fraud is a problem, and the people who choose to commit fraud put themselves at risk of a $10,000 fine and or 6 months imprisonment as a result of committing that fraud. So I would think that there would be a cost-benefit analysis involved for the people who are intending or have committed fraud as to are they willing to give up their liberty or that much money in fines to commit fraud? So in short, like I say, the voters list wouldn't prevent multiple voting, wouldn't prevent anything like that, because they can still vote even if they're not on the list. They can still come in and fill a statutory declaration and say, I'm eligible.
So then the Form 8 would stand for the people who were not on the list.
That's correct.
And so if you're on the list, then you would no longer have to fill out a Form 8? Is that exactly how we're... I'd like to clarify that.
I'm not sure of that. I'm not sure if anyone else has knowledge of... Again, there's no best practices in Alberta to say whether it would substitute for Form 8. My impression would be that you'd still need to have a Form 8. It would just be a different way of identifying you rather than bringing in your power bill or your driver's license with the address or whatever else you happen to bring in.
So just a general question is, when someone comes in with ID that does not associate itself with Alberta in any way, why do we still allow them to vote?
That's a very good question, and perhaps another option for the Local Authorities Election Act revision. Currently, the Act requires us to allow someone to vote if they fill out the statutory declaration and declare that they are eligible. So, and the change, adding a voters list, wouldn't change that. We still are required to take people at their word, and the scrutineers can then, or the election workers can also contest whether that person was eligible to vote or not. And those are all kept separate and reviewed.
So if we're relying on the scrutineers, and this year it was such a gong show, how are we going to rely on them when they're on the other side of the room to see these things? We were not allowed to see the Form 8s, the ID, anything. I was put in a corner and told to stay there. So how does that help our situation when that's how we're enforcing what our scrutineers are doing?
Could you clarify that question?
So as a scrutineer, what am I scrutinizing? What am I looking at if I'm at the other side of the room and I'm not allowed to see the Form 8, I'm not allowed to see any ID, I'm not allowed to be around the table, I'm sitting where Kent is, and this is where the voters are, over here.
Mm-hmm. So, through the chair, the intent of the scrutineers and the reasons that they're handled the way they are in various municipalities, and I can advise that the municipalities that I'm aware of in my previous employment and in speaking to other clerks use the same method, where the scrutineers are across the room, and that's balancing, I think, the privacy rights of the individuals who are showing up to vote. They don't feel intimidated, they don't feel like their personal information is being collected inappropriately, with the need to make sure that there's an opportunity to detect voting fraud. So it's a balance that that municipalities attempt to weigh, and I'm not sure if they've got it right, but it is the way it is right now.
Okay, so we have quite a few things that we actually need to look into and figure out how we can do much better to start with. Yeah, the pig's coming to visit me. Yay, stars. Okay, I'll let the mic go.
Sorry. Through the chair to Ms. Keeble, can you tell me what the 2017 voter turnout average was for Rocky View?
I can gather that information for you. I don't have
yes.
it. Yes. Top of that. Perhaps Ms. Sitting.
About?
I believe it's about 30% was the
okay.
voter turnout.
Okay, so we're a little bit worried about ultimate accuracy on data collection on an activity where 30% of the people come out to vote. I think we have to keep in mind that the reality is that any improvement we make will show up as, I think, a huge difference against that 30%. So if we're missing, say, 5% of accuracy on data collection, it's really diluted down. By the time we get out to who's actually at the voting stations. I think we need to look outside Alberta. Don't be so insular. That's not a question, sorry. What would happen if we looked outside Alberta? Would there be any downsides to that?
Actually, this isn't a public hearing, so
you're right.
And give an opinion.
So, through the chair to Councillor Hansen.
So.
In researching for this report, I did look extensively, not only in Canada, but in the United States as well, which has quite a different process for how they run elections. Again, I noticed I found pros, I found cons to the voters list idea, and really it's a council decision weighing all of those pros and cons.
Okay. A little bit further to Councillor McKeiler's line of questioning, but data-wise, in terms of our tax assessment role and the resident role, they are two different things. Do they have to be kept separate? Is that a requirement of legislation, or really is that just part of our big database and we know everything about everything that goes on in Rocky View?
Through the chair to Councillor Hansen, I don't like to think of us as big brother, that's for sure. I can tell you that, and perhaps Mr. Robinson can jump in here as well, the assessment database is, of course, based on tax roll information.
Legal owners.
Yes, the legal owners, which, as I believe it was Councillor McKeiler mentioned, I'm not sure who said it, maybe, about renters and the amount of renters we have renting property. And so, yeah, they're quite distinct in the purposes, and I'm not sure they could be tied together, but it's a good question.
Because in my mind, I saw really is no different census, tax roll, election list. It's all part of the data we have locked up in our secure servers here. Last point I want to make is we really haven't discussed that there still is a methodology to register to vote at the station, even if you are not on the list. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's correct.
So philosophically, maybe it's a question to my fellow councillors, but how does that stop fraud if the intent is to attack the weakest point, which might be actually registering at the voting station? Like, why even bother trying to get enumerated if you want to be up to no good and just use our fairly lackadaisical check-in procedures when you check into the electoral hotel to cast your vote?
Did you intend that question for me or for your fellow councillors?
Both.
Okay. In my opinion, the voters list does have several benefits, and reducing multiple voting fraud is one of them. Because again, if you show up on the list and your name is struck off, then the person who's giving you your ballot is likely to raise an eyebrow and probably make a note on your Form 8 that you may not have been eligible to vote because you've already voted. So that will be the one benefit. Again, it does open other avenues for fraud. In that there's then an opportunity for voter registration fraud in that.
So could we get as sophisticated as having mobile devices in the voting station? So if you're struck off the list at station A, you cannot go to station B and cast another vote because you've already been checked off as being voted in the original station.
I think that's, through the chair, that's an excellent idea, and one that when the Local Authorities Election Act review is being completed, I would recommend that you as a council or that you as a councillor might want to put forward. I think that's an interesting idea. I'm not sure if the Act allows for it right now. It might, but I think that the Act could be clarified to allow for that kind of a technological improvement. Some of these Acts were written well before technology gave us the tools they have now.
Yeah. And even failing that, I mean, the advance polling should definitely be struck off in any case. That requires no immediate feedback from the polling stations. But all right, those are my thoughts. Generally, I support this. It would be interesting to wait to 2019, but I think we need a drop-dead date. If we don't see the province move, then we should strike out on our own and forge ahead and show some leadership or think of ourselves as leaders in the province, so this would be a great way to also support that viewpoint from our peers.
So if I could make a suggestion through you, Mr. Reeve, as to a timeline, a drop-dead date, if you will, to do a permanent electors register while allowing the Local Authorities Election Act review to be completed. I think by the fall of 2020, the election is in the fall of 2021, a one-year lead time before the election would be sufficient in order to create either a permanent electors list or an ad hoc voters list, depending on what council decides. So I'm not sure if that helps, but I think a one-year lead time would be sufficient.
Thank you.
Sure. Through the chair to Councillor Hansen, for the voter turnout for the 2017 election was 30.4%, so I was close. So there were 9,192 voters who, out of a possible 30,235 eligible voters who turned up.
Deputy Reeve Gautreau.
Thank you, through the chair. Just wondering, can you tell me how many charges have been laid in Rockaby County?
We currently have submitted information to the Cochrane RCMP for investigation of possible voter fraud in two separate instances. Now, of course, we don't have authority within Rocky View County to lay a charge under the Local Authorities Election Act. That lies with the RCMP. So they'll consider the evidence. They're going to be speaking with the Crown Prosecutor for the area and determining whether there's enough evidence to charge in this case or whether it's in the public interest to charge. So unfortunately, now that we've provided all the information, it's in their hands as to whether charges will be laid.
Was that for the 2017 election?
Correct.
Have we had any charges previous to that, before on other elections?
Not to my knowledge. There was one written decision, which happened in 1987, that I read up on last night. The case is Isley and Crilly, if you're interested. It's a 1987 Alberta Court of Queen's Bench decision involving Rocky View County, in which the election in one division was overturned as a result of improper election administration. So they took into account the fact that the election workers hadn't signed their oaths to be election workers, and there was a couple other problems with the administration, and there was only four votes separating the two people. But that's it was an interesting case involving Rocky View.
So could it be, and I know all of us up here just went through an election, could it be because of the way that we get our information or the way that we scrutineer or try to get the information via Form 8s or et cetera, could that be a reason why we don't have a lot more charges or prosecutions is the way maybe we conduct our elections?
To my knowledge, in the province of Alberta, there was one other municipality that did was considering a charge or has laid a charge against a school board trustee who it was alleged was not eligible to run due to not having Canadian residency. I don't recall her name, but I did hear it in the media recently. It's something that is detected through the Form 8s, and as we've discussed, the scrutineers or the election workers have the ability to fill out the objection section. Those are then reviewed by the returning officer at after the election is completed to determine whether there would be evidence enough to lay a charge. Is it enough to detect voter fraud? I couldn't say. Is it the only way? No. I think there's other ways and possibly better ways. And I'm hoping the Local Authorities Election Act review considers some of those differences.
Okay. I mean, fraud is fraud, and we want to take people for the best as they are. I mean, you know, does it happen? Could it happen? Possibly. You're saying no other municipality that you know of has a voters list. Doesn't Calgary have something like an ad hoc voters list?
So from my understanding, Calgary and I think Red Deer both did an enumeration at one point to collect information for the purpose of creating a voters list, but to my understanding, neither of them use it in that fashion. I stand to be corrected, but that's my understanding.
So in 2017, it was all over the media how the City of Calgary had buses everywhere collecting, you know, people. Their information was uploaded to a server, and it says that I voted, and this is what it was. And so if I try to go to another voting station, of course, I wasn't able to vote because it's had my name crossed off already. So
I was not aware of that. That would be surprising to me.
It was all over global TV.
Okay.
A really good turnout this year is because they decided to go technical and put everything out there. So McMahon Stadium, everywhere else, there was Calgary City buses there. I think we can maybe learn from, you know, the City of Calgary has well over a million people, and we're over 30,000 plus people. So we might be able to maybe learn something from them. So some of my questions have already been asked, and sorry, 40,000 people then. Well, there might be some babies born.
Might be 41.
So some of my questions already been asked is, have we looked outside our own borders? You know, and like I said, we're right in we sit in the city that I know have some type of technology and where they're doing things, but, you know, is there other municipalities in Canada that do things? You know, some of my research is I'm not here to pick on any province, but, you know, let's face it, if our friends in Newfoundland can come up and their municipalities can do this, I mean, I think we can be looking at something as well. I do agree with you that voting within Rocky View County, P.O. boxes are horrible. You know, there were so many times when, you know, I heard people saying, oh, another P.O. box from Calgary, how do I know that you're from here? So I think this really needs to be addressed in some way or some fashion, even if this voter list isn't created, but even within our own Elections Act, is, you know, here's my driver's license, it's a P.O. box, and it's a Calgary address. There was a lot of confusion that I found even at this elections with that. So, you know, either I highly recommend we get with Canada Post and we get, you know, Rocky View, our own Rocky View addresses, which we have some in Rocky View now, and other ones are P.O. boxes, so we might want to look at that. And I am kind of interested on the agreement that you're saying between the province and ourselves with information going back and forth. But I do have to agree with some of my counterparts that, you know, under the Elections Authority Act, I mean, on 49, permanent electors registered for 49 all the way down, I don't know if I'm misreading it, but I'm reading it where we actually can collect our own data, we can have our own enumerations, and we can have our own voters list. So I'm kind of just a little confused about that whole act, and I'm by no means a lawyer, but I just interpret it maybe different, and we all know that the acts are open for interpretation.
Well, that's why lawyers are so important in our society and so useful, to interpret legislation readily, yes.
Anyway, thank you.
Councillor McKeeler.
Through the Reeve. I noticed you didn't chastise a couple other people, just so you know. Thank you. through the Reeve. So, actually, to Councillor Kissel, having both been a returning officer in a federal and a provincial election, anybody that walks in and says they're eligible to vote, as long as they're willing to sign a piece of paper or take an oath, they're allowed to vote. They actually don't even have to have an address. So this isn't just unique to this municipality or Alberta. It's across Canada. So, and the other thing that having a list allows for is reverse fraud. So, or accidents. So, and I can tell you as being as somebody who scratched off names during the last federal election, I accidentally scratched off the wrong name. I didn't realize it at the time, and then that person actually came in to vote. And I can tell you it was a big kerfuffle trying to figure out if we could allow them to vote. And at the end, we did allow them to vote because I realized I had scratched off the same last name, but just the wrong thing. So accidents can happen, and a voter's list, in my mind, while I would have loved to have one while I was campaigning, that would have been absolutely outstanding. I'm actually not sure, until we sort of address some of these fundamental issues, it addresses, I think, the spirit of what we're trying to do, which is prevent voter fraud. I think people signing a piece of paper saying they're willing to go to jail, again, maybe we need to prosecute more, maybe we need to investigate more, maybe we need to do all those things so that piece of paper ends up having some teeth, so that people are actually fearful of doing it. But I don't know too many people that would go to jail for me. Maybe I need to have better friends. Just saying. And that was it. Those are my last comments.
Councillor Wright.
Through the chair, I was going to move to close, but I see that Dan, Councillor Henn hasn't spoken. Did you want to chime in?
Sure, real quick.
Councillor Henn.
Through the Reeve. I recently, being a box holder in the county, I recently received information that Canada Post is initiating an initiative to get rid of post office boxes and go with physical addresses. I wonder if we could look into that a little more to see if that's going to be countywide or just for... I'm sure it's not just for me. I'm sure of that. And to Councillor McKeiler's comments, you know, I personally witnessed a gentleman coming into a voting station during the election, and he wasn't allowed to vote due to he had the wrong ID or something like that. And they wouldn't let the poor fellow vote. He was very upset about it. He asked if there was something he could sign or an oath he could take. So not saying your comments are wrong, but if that's the case, I think our elections officials need to be educated a little more. And my last point, I'd sure like to see some numbers on electronic voting, like what it would cost us, because I think that's far and above the best way to go. That's my comments.
Thank you. Well, just be now, if Councillor Wright is going to close, you guys are done. I'm going to wade into this a little bit. This whole thing, I think there's a lot of great ideas out there. We used to have, and I don't want to call it divisional, but it was a process of where you were registered to vote at a certain polling station. And that streamlined things, and why we went away from that, I couldn't tell you. But I think that would be an interim solution at least. I think there's things coming. Technology is going to be up, and I agree with Councillor Henn. Why wouldn't that be something we'd investigate? So it appears we might be a little bit premature here with the government maybe doing something. And I also question how we want to hire 20 people. We want to spend in excess of a couple hundred thousand dollars to do this, and we still only get 30% of our people out. So, and we have really no problems. We've got things that are opinions of problems, but nothing ever proved or one in the 80s or something that was administrative. So I wonder if we don't have bigger fish to fry, but we'll go to Councillor McIver.
Yeah, I just thank you. I just want to close with, and as I had written it down and I didn't say it, I do think that, again, we need better scrutineering framework. I think scrutineers were treated differently at different polling stations. The scrutineer at my polling station hovered like a vulture, and people felt very intimidated and wrote down tons of personal information. And yet, in other polling stations, they weren't allowed to do that. And if we have the local act not being administered the same way, meaning in some places they're denied to vote, in other places they're allowed to vote. So I think we could do a lot better on, one, hiring and training the people that are actually at the polling stations and make sure that we're administering the rules we do have the same, and as well understanding what is allowed and not allowed and training our... I mean, we did have scrutineer training, but again, it appears that it was administered differently at different polling stations. And I think those two things might be our biggest opportunity for improvement.
Councillor Camacci, did you want to speak? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just, again, like Mothers Against Drunk Driving during the winter party campaign, make the deterrent more public so that people know if I'm about to commit voter fraud during an election campaign, it's 10 grand or whatever, 6 months in jail. That's a pretty strong deterrent. At least that would be for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Wright to close.
Okay, through the chair. So I just have a couple of clarifications too. I didn't say at any point in time we wouldn't collect a date of birth. What I said was that with the candidates list, what the information that was distributed on that list could be severely modified from what we gather during an enumeration. So I do believe that we would need a date of birth. Absolutely. Do I believe that the LAEA review will address a voter's list? I don't know. And I do believe it's at this point, it's a crapshoot. So, and if we were going to be looking at a drop-dead date, I would not be inclined to agree with October of 2020. I would be more, or fall of 2020. I would move it to fall of 2019, simply based on the fact this last time we were supposed to have divisions, and I know myself and somebody else met with you, Ms. Keibel, to discuss having divisions at least in this next, in the last election. And we were pretty much assured that that was going to happen. But then when all the changes came last minute, we were advised there was insufficient time to have that done. So I would not want to run into any way, shape, or form that we do not get this done just because we do not give ourselves enough time frame. So I would be willing to wait for the province to see what they're going to do, but my absolute drop-dead date would be October of 2019, and then that gives you 2 years to get, or 24 months to get it up and running. I do believe fraud can happen in any system. If there was no such thing as fraud, we wouldn't have police and we wouldn't have jails, right? So I think that's just a moot point. Nothing is foolproof. I do believe that a voter's list is a big deterrent. It stops the vote early, vote often, and it stops you from being able to vote five or six times in one election. Regardless of whether or not you fill out a Form 8, to have those Form 8s looked at is incredibly difficult and incredibly costly. And so while a fine might be $10,000, if we look back and see how many people have asked to see if they could do it, there's a number, myself included. I was going to have mine looked at. So if you want to talk about real... I spoke to a lawyer, but it would have cost me anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000. I lost by 21 votes in the last election, so 21 votes isn't that many. We have some people who, damn, what was it, six votes? Four votes. So one person, and that's all it takes of 40,000 people. So at this point in time, is it the be-all and end-all? No, but I think it's a really good start. As well, 53.3 of the LAEA does state that when you show up, just because your name's on a voter's list doesn't mean you don't have to show ID. And we can, as an 53.3 says, an elected authority may, by a bylaw passed no later than 6 months prior to nomination day of a year in which an election is held, provide for the number and types of identification that are required to be produced by a person to verify the person's name and current address for the purpose of determining whether the person is eligible to vote. So that could be added in as well, and we can have it that you have to show a valid driver's license. And as well, the other thing that having a voter's list does open up is vouching. And again, I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing, and we'd have to make sure that there were rules about that. So again, it's not foolproof. In the past election, and the one that we just had, computers did go down, and so I know there was an inability for people to even verify their ID. If we have a printed voters list, I think that that would stop that. Again, the information on that list can be very nominal, just name and addresses. I don't think you need phone numbers, and we're worried about privacy. And in speaking to Councillor Hansen's comments there about real time, yeah, if we have a computer up and running in the system that ties through, I think that that would be fabulous as well. However, again, if the systems go down, I do think you need a paper copy there too. And then pretty much, you know, we complain about voter turnout. Here's the opportunity to make it more streamlined. I know in my election it was lined up out the door from beginning to end. I think we had over 1,600 voters, which was, it was amazing, but it was slow, and a lot of the complaints were about filling out the Form 8, and it could have been streamlined. I wonder how many people we really would have had if they hadn't shown up and showed the lineup out the door. So I think a voters list accommodates that as well. And as well, and I think Councillor Hansen said this too, we, like, being a leader as a province, we had no problem with when it came to medical marijuana facility. We've also been the first to use transfer development credits. So why not be the first to do a voters list? And we're not really the first. We're just the first in Alberta. So I think I'll close on that at this point in time. I'd like to move for option one. And just give me a second and I can read that. Maybe I moved. Do you have it, Tyler? We're all on sleep mode now.
Are you going to put it up?
There we go. There we go. That
there we go.
A Rocky View County resident list of electors. Sorry, let's start again. Motion that a Rocky View County resident list of electors voter list be created and used in all subsequent Rocky View County elections.
Councillor Hansen.
Need the Twilight friendly amendment added to that, the drop dead date.
Yeah, I would support that with a drop dead date of October 2019. If the
Just to be clear, is that to begin in October 2019, not to be completed in 2019?
To commence at the absolute latest, I guess, would be. Is that what you your
sir? Commencement date. A commencement date. No later
than. Do we don't need to move on the amendment, do we? It's friendly.
So long as it's friendly, there's no need for a motion.
Okay. Thank you. So we will call a question. All in favor? And recorded vote. Councillor Camachi.
Against.
In favor.
In favor.
Opposed.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
That is carried. We'll take 10 minutes and come back for public hearing. We'll call the meeting back to order and go to item C1 on the agenda. Councillor Henn.
I would move that the public hearing for item C1 be opened.
Move to open the hearing. All in favor? That is carried. Thank you. Could we get the report, please?
Good morning, Chair and the Council members. My name is Xin Deng, Municipal Planner, representing Planning Services. As you see, I added some notes on my slides. Hope that will help you understand my presentation better. The subject land is located approximately 2 miles north of the city of Calgary and 1 mile east of Highway 772. The purpose of this application is to redesignate a portion of the land from a ranch and farm district to residential 2 district, in order to facilitate the creation of a 4-acre parcel with 156-acre remainder. The land is currently used for farming operation. The existing dwelling is serviced by piped water and the septic tank field system. The land is accessed via the existing porch of Range Road 20. This application has been evaluated in accordance with the county plan. The proposal meets the residential first parcel out policy of the county plan. The proposed new lot meets the definition of a first parcel out. It meets the minimum parcel size requirement for R2 district. It is located at least 300 meters from a highway and it has access, direct access to the municipal road. the remainder parcel still used as agriculture land. The proposed residential use will be compatible with adjacent agriculture and residential uses. The land is also located in the City of Calgary's future growth area, as identified in the intermunicipal development plan. The application was circulated to the City of Calgary for comments. They have no objection to this application. The application was circulated to 28 adjacent landowners, and no letters were received. The application meets applicable policies of the county plan and the land use bylaw. Therefore, administration recommends approval in accordance with option one. And here we have a video. The video was taken near the existing porch of Rand Road 20. So looking north, this is a Rand Road 20. It's a current it's a gravel road. Moving to the east, here's adjacent land, and it's also zoned a ranch and farm. There's one dwelling on here, but the majority land is still used as agricultural use. That's the parcel to the east. Now moving to the south, adjacent land is still used as agricultural use. And this is the Rand Road 20. It's a slope down a little bit to the south, but because it's agricultural use, there's no geotechnical concern. So now we move back to it starts to see the subject land. And here is the existing residence. That's the existing access. And then we move back to the north. It's still agriculture use on the remainder parcel. And here's the farmstead parcel to the north. And the video closed at the north. Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me. We'll now ask the applicant to come forward and tell us about their project. And you got 20 minutes to give us your presentation. Just state your name into the microphone for the record, and thank you.
Thanks. Morning, Council. My name is Shauna Savile, and I am the daughter of Doug and Carol Savile, who are the applicants of this motion. They can't be here today, so they've asked me to speak on their behalf. I do have a couple of things that they've asked me just to inform you of. And just the history of the property is that it's been in their possession since March of 1993, and it's been a rental property since 1994. And since they live in British Columbia, it's getting harder and harder for them to keep up with the maintenance of the house, because the house was built in the 70s, and so it needs maintenance and stuff. So it's hard for them to come from BC to here often. My father's brother, Doug's brother, Walter Savile, actually manages the pasture and the croplands that are around the house in that remaining quarter section. And discussions with him confirmed that redesignation of the 4 acres would not have an impact on the pasture or the cropland. They have also not received any verbal or written objections, either to the county or directly to themselves about their applications, and they feel that the redesignation application meets the bylaw policy requirements of Rocky View County for a residential 2 district. And that's about it.
Yeah.
If you have any questions.
I don't see any. You did a good job.
It's pretty straightforward.
We do have a question. I was wrong.
Can't let you off that easy. Through the chair. And maybe this is a question for operations later, but is there a separate access to the farming area? I can't see in my photo.
Is.
Can you tell me where that is?
There is. It's. Oh, look at that. So there is a little access right here. And then there is another one just above it. I used to live in this property for a few years. So there's one right here that you can get to the top part. And then there's another one right here where you can get to this. This is just green feed here.
Yeah, because from other photos, it looked like the farming was different, whether it was further down the hill or at the top of the hill.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, the house itself is, like, right on top of the hill. And then this area is just kind of pasture because it's quite steep and rocky. So you can't really do too much with it. This is either canola or barley, depending on the year. And then this ends up being just green feed, hay, whatever my uncle decides to do with it that year.
Okay. So if down the road, different owners, it's not going to stop access to the farmland. There's two.
Oh, no. They have their own access here. And then this is actually this where my uncle's place is. Right on the other side of that is 566, Highway 566. So, and then he's got his own access through the back way, too.
All right, thank you.
Thank you once again. I see no further questions. So you can take your seat.
Great, thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks again. Is there any questions for administration? Seeing none, well, now there was no one on the list for those in favor. We'll ask for anyone in favor to come and speak. And seeing no one coming forward, we'll ask for anyone in opposition. Again, no one on the list. So seeing no one coming forward, councillors wish.
I move that the public hearing for item C1 be closed.
Move to close the hearing. All in favor? That is carried. We're closed. Councillor Hamm.
I would move that we go with option one and motion that bylaw C7747-2017 be given first reading.
Motion for first reading, all in favor? That is carried. Councillor Shule.
I'll make the second motion, motion two, that the bylaw C7747-2017 be given second reading.
Second reading, all in favor? And that is carried. Deputy Reeve Gautreaux.
Thank you. That bylaw C7747-2017 be considered for third reading.
Consideration of third, all in favor? That is carried. And Councillor Henn.
I move that bylaw C7747-2017 be given third and final reading.
Third reading, all in favor? That is carried. Your application has been passed. Thank you very much. We'll go to C2. And, whoops. Councillor Shule.
I'll make a motion for a public hearing for C2.
To open?
To open. That's what I meant.
Move to open the hearing. All in favor? That is carried. Could we get the report, please?
Good morning, Mr. Reeve and members of council. My name is Jamie Kirchuk, and I will be speaking on behalf of Planning Services this morning. Item C2 is located at the southeast junction of Highway 560 or Glenmore Trail and Range Road 284 on the eastern boundary of the City of Calgary. The lands are located in an area of the county that features predominantly agriculture land with limited business industrial uses directly to the east. The purpose of this application in front of you today is to redesignate the subject lands from Ranch and Farm District to Direct Control District to accommodate 4 business industrial lots and 2 public utility lots. The subject lands contain 2 existing dwellings that are serviced by a well and a conventional septic system. The applicant is proposing the use of water cisterns and a sewage holding tank for water and wastewater servicing. Access is currently achieved via an undeveloped road allowance off Highway 560 here for the east parcel and an approach off of 284 for the west parcel. The applicant is proposing to upgrade the intersections at Highway 560 and Range Road 283 and Range Road 283 and Norman Place Road to extend Norman Place Road to the west to service the proposed development. In order to accommodate the growth of the county's business sectors, the county plan identifies the appropriate location in which business development should occur to maximize efficiency and minimize conflicts. The county plan does not support applications in the vicinity of these locations. The janitor area structure plan, which provides a policy framework and comprehensive planning for both highway commercial and industrial developments, covers the area directly north of the subject lands. As lands are not located within the boundaries of an area structure plan or conceptual scheme, the application was evaluated with the policies of the county plan. Administration reviewed these business development policies and determined that because the proposed development is located outside of an identified business area, as identified on Map 1 of the county plan, the proposal is adjacent to the janitor area structure plan and therefore does not meet county plan policy 1419. And furthermore, the proposal is inconsistent with the Rocky View County City of Calgary Intermunicipal Development Plan, specifically sections 8.12 and 8.14. For these reasons, administration recommends refusal in accordance with option 2, and I have prepared a quick viewing for council's consideration. So the video starts looking north on Range Road 284, across from Highway 560, Glenmore Trail. These lands here are within the Janet Area Structure Plan. As we pan east, you'll start to see the subject lands coming into view to your right, looking east on Glenmore Trail. As we move further east towards the south, you'll see the existing homestead on the west parcel coming into view. Now we are looking south down Range Road 284. And now we're looking at the adjacent lands as we pan west, and the City of Calgary boundary will start to come into view now. Now looking west down Glenmore Trail towards the City of Calgary, and then panning back around going north. And that concludes my presentation this morning. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now call on the applicant to come forward and tell us about your project. State your name for the record.
Good morning, Reeve and Council. My name is Steve Grandy, and I'm here on behalf of my clients over here who have owned these lands for a number of years and have long awaited this day to be able to get in front of you and request a change in land use so that they can move forward with their plans for development. I think a lot of the information is already in the materials you have, and Jamie's laid that out for you. Seems to me that there are four questions that remain outstanding, four questions that I would like to ask today and perhaps answer. Should this property be industrial? Should this property have been within the Janet ASP? Isn't this an infill application, and does this fit in the county plan? Question number one, should this be industrial? I'm going to tell you the answer is yes, that's already been decided by Rocky View County, that these lands will be industrial, and that the question is not should this be industrial, but when should it be industrial. The IDP, the Intermunicipal Development Plan, was established back in 2011, I think passed in 2012. You see the Section 21 where the subject property is right in this circle here, and it's in this orange area which is identified. Wow, I can't read it on my screen, but it says something like Highway 560 Joint Industrial Corridor. So in 2011, this was identified as being part of a joint industrial corridor. There's another map in the IDP that shows it a little bit clearer, and Section 21 is circled there again. It's in this purple area, and it is lands that are designated as a future growth area for industrial for the City of Calgary. And so it was established back in 2011 that these lands would be eventually annexed into the City of Calgary, and it was agreed upon at that time that these would be industrial properties. Some notes from the administration comments are that, first of all, the City of Calgary is not necessarily opposed to what we're doing here. We've had discussions with Neil Younger from the City of Calgary. We've had joint discussions, just informal, I suppose, about the lands. And they're not opposed to these lands being industrial. As it states in administration's own comment, page 35, the lands are appropriate for future industrial development. The comments from the City of Calgary go on to state, though, that the issue is the precedent it sets for future subdivision within the Calgary Future Urban Growth Corridor. So they don't have an issue with the land use. They have a concern about fragmentation. And in our discussions with Neil Younger, he said that what they would really like is they'd like to be able to sit down with us and talk about how those lands are subdivided. In the comments on page 40, it says that they request that this application be brought forward to the IMC. We would support that. In fact, we sought to see if there was a way that we could push it to the IMC, but you'll see in the earlier part of the comments here, if Rocky View County Administration is moving forward recommending approval, then it would be brought to the IMC. Because administration was not recommending approval, it never had a way to get to the IMC. We never had an opportunity to be able to talk about how these lands might be subdivided. And so the City of Calgary has made it clear that they want these industrial. They just want to be at the table when we're discussing how we carve them up. So, answer to question one, should it be industrial? It's already been answered, already agreed by both municipalities that the answer is yes. Question number two, should this property have been within the Janet ASP? One of the big detractors that's mentioned here in the application is that it's not in the Janet ASP. And my contention is that there's no way that we could have made it in the Janet ASP. Again, because the agreement was that these lands would be annexed by the City of Calgary, it would have made it extremely difficult to include this. Let me give you the timeline. The IDP was established in 2011, passed in 2012. The Rocky View County Plan came in 2013, and the Janet ASP came in 2014. And so if in 2014, Rocky View County said, well, we want to include these lands in the Janet ASP, you can imagine the difficulties there would have been. I vaguely remember the process in 2014 and how seamless the whole thing went. And maybe behind the scenes, it was probably a lot more work from the way it appeared from the outside. But I don't think there were any appeals and things moved fairly smoothly. If Rocky View County had suggested that they go south of Highway 560 to enlarge the ASP, I think it's almost a given that there would have been some serious concerns by the City of Calgary. So there's no way that we could have been put in the Janet ASP. Would it have been ideal? Yes. I think if you look at these lands, you'll see that it's perfect development lands for industrial development. So that brings up the next question, which I'm sure that some of you are considering. Can you take the development that's being proposed for this property and put it into the Janet ASP? Would this development be better located within the Janet ASP? And my answer is no, that these are definitely unique lands because of their situation on Highway 560. Take a look at the Janet ASP and you'll see that it's largely purple and green. Purple is industrial, the green is future business center, something like that, but future industrial. Down here you've got a little bit of red and up here there's a little bit of red. The red is commercial and the red is in this case is very difficult to get to because there's a lot of discussion about what this interchange is going to be. It's just very difficult land to get to. As you move along Glenmore Trail, you have the golf course right here. That's potentially one day, I suppose, the south part of the golf course could be redeveloped. Here you have Prairie Schooner Estates, residential. Over here, you've got a tree farm and an interchange again coming in, taking a good chunk of it. Over here, you saw the video panning past this property, and it looked like really nice, flat property. But if you had looked at it in a different season, you'd see that there's about a 100-acre lake sitting right in here. So there's no development going to happen right on Glenmore Trail. And so the next available place for any kind of commercial development would be further out here right next to 283. This is perfect for that kind of commercial development. The City of Calgary acknowledges this in their ASP that they've created for the Shepherd Industrial the Shepherd Industrial Area Structure Plan, and you take a look at it again, you see a lot of purple in here, which is just the general industrial. But right along Glenmore Trail, they've got this pinkish-colored line. That's commercial. That's highway, some kind of highway commercial, industrial commercial. It's just a natural that that would be extended as you continue to the east. And so could it have been included in the Janet ASP? No, the political situation just didn't allow for that. Can you take this kind of development and put it in the ASP? No, because you don't have that highway traffic running through the Janet area. And so, you know, I would contend that this is something that's kind of caught. It's caught between policies right now. Question number three. Isn't this an infill application? The comments in the staff report say the proposed business development location does not infill or intensify an existing business area, maximize the use of existing infrastructure, minimize land use conflicts with agricultural uses, or minimize the amount of traffic being drawn into rural areas. Let's take a closer look. So here's the subject lands. Just north of it is the Janet ASP, and here you can see this 100-acre lake right underneath the words. Over to the west, you have the Shepherd Industrial ASP right up to the boundary. Down here, this red, or this colorblind, this yellow diamond is the NMAX Shepherd Energy Center. And if you haven't driven by the area, it doesn't matter because you've probably seen it wherever you are in the Western world with its plumes of smoke going up. Here's a picture of it taken from the gate of the subject property. My understanding is this is the largest development of this site in Western Canada, that this generating station has the potential to provide half the power for the city of Calgary. So this is no small development right next to it on the west side. You come around and you have a sour gas facility down here. All of these purple areas are industrial lands. You've got concrete and asphalt recycling. There's this is a picture of this development underneath here, and it's changed uses a number of times from storage to pipe to concrete to a number of different uses. Coming around the top, you have Glenmore Trail or Highway 560, which is a dangerous goods route, and the TIA shows that at peak hours, there are 500 vehicles per hour. That's, according to my math, I think one vehicle every 7 seconds. So you have right now farmland in the midst of all of this stuff happening, and Range Road 284, which goes down here, that doesn't actually go anywhere. There's a gate across 284 with a lock on it right at this gate because it's just oil-related, oil well access down further below. So you've got farmland that is completely surrounded by industrial, and if we were to, you know, actively farm this land and pull a swather out of the property, the only way out of the property is to pull that swather onto Glenmore Trail, and that's certainly in nobody's interest. The proposal that we have is that we would extend Norman's Place Road through here. This is Range Road 283, and this is perhaps one of the more difficult intersections in southeast Rocky View because Rocky View paved 283 up to Chestermere, and so my fellow residents love to come down there when that road is open on the Chestermere side, and you get significant volumes of traffic coming out of Chestermere and turning into the city at this point, and people from Langdon that are coming in are constantly issuing concerns about how they navigate through that intersection. And so the proposal that we have would be to enhance this and given AT's permission and instruction to get some signals there and make this whole thing safer so that there would be no farm access onto Glenmore Trail. And that this property down here could also use access through the extension of Norman Place. So I take a look at the comment about it not being infill, and I think maybe there's just one little error, and that's the word not. The proposed business development location does infill. It's completely surrounded by industrial. It intensifies an existing business area, and although the county plan doesn't identify it as a business area, the IDP before it certainly does. it maximizes the use of existing infrastructure and enhances it even by improving access out to Glenmore Trail and along 283. It minimizes land conflicts with agricultural uses and minimizes the amount of traffic being drawn into rural areas, because this isn't really even a rural area anymore. And it minimizes the conflicts with agriculture by taking it out of agricultural use. So isn't this infill? I fail to see how it isn't infill. Finally, does this fit in the county plan? As I mentioned, the IDP clearly identifies Section 21 as being in this industrial corridor, joint industrial corridor. The IDP is a bylaw of county. County has already established by bylaw that this is industrial property, or that this will be. The land use application has not caught up to it until today, but the bylaw that was created in 2011 says this is an industrial corridor. The county plan that comes along 2 years later doesn't incorporate that. And so bylaw, the IDP bylaw, to my knowledge, was never rescinded. But the contents of this particular location were not incorporated into the county plan. So even though the county and the city agreed that this would be industrial, that this is a business area, yet in the county plan it was never identified. Whether that was an oversight or whether it was just a way to minimize potential conflict with the city of Calgary, I don't know. But we have two bylaws, the first one which says that this this definitely does fit. The county plan vision and principles say that the county plan's vision and principles serve as a guide for county development. If we were to use the letter of the county law for every application, it would become extremely difficult. I believe that there are well over 3,000 parcels in Rocky View County, and you certainly can't be definitive and write out the letter on each one of them. And so that county plan is there as a guide. It's there with your other statutory plans, like the IDP, to be able to say where and when should development happen. You look at the principles that are listed in the very opening of the county plan, and it talks about growth and fiscal sustainability. Well, this move today certainly increases growth and fiscal sustainability of the county. The county right now is collecting about $6,000 a year in property taxes on these two parcels with their two residences. And if industrial development were to happen there, you know that would go up significantly. With respect to the environment, I'm not sure that there's anything that we can do to fix what happened just to the west of these properties. With respect to agricultural, rural communities, rural service, this is clearly, it's not a rural area. And then partnerships, my clients would love to sit down with the City of Calgary and talk about what this would look like, whether that's a shadow plan that helps define where any buildings would go on these larger parcels that wouldn't conflict with future more in-depth subdivision, or what. I mean, they're certainly open and anxious to do that. And so I take a look at these questions. Should the property be industrial? That's already been answered. The question is when. When does the property turn over? Should this property have been included within the Janet ASP? Well, it's an ideal piece of property for, I mean, you even look at the video and the way it just slopes up the hill off of Glenmore Trail, perfect for certain kinds of commercial business, for people driving down Glenmore to be able to see. It's almost like a grocery store shelf sitting there with a potential for some interesting commercial developments. I am a commercial real estate broker, and I know that I've had a number of conversations with industry that are looking for certain kinds of sites with larger yards where they can display their product. They certainly can't do that inside the hamlet of within the Janet ASP until it gets all the way out to Range Road 283. Isn't this an infill application? Again, I don't see how it's not. And does this fit in the county plan? It fits in the county plans when you look at the IDP again. And though it's not specifically mentioned, the backdrop is clearly there. The city is supportive of industrial land use in this place. Just the question is, how does this get carved up? So the bottom line is, should this be an industrial site? Yes. The question is, when? And we would ask you to make that today. Thank you.
Thank you. You got 3 minutes. Do you want to just keep going? Oh, well done. We do have a question. Councillor Shule.
I actually have more question for administration. I'll just step back in case somebody has for...
There's no other lights on, okay. So go ahead.
Okay. There's a couple of things. Say if council wished, would like to send this to IMC, what would the process be? Do we give it first, close the hearing, give it first reading, and then send it to IMC? Or what would the process be?
Through the chair, I would suggest if there was likely to be more information coming out of that discussion at IMC, I would leave the hearing open, table the matter, send it to IMC, have the IMC report brought back to council.
But would council wish to do that? How do we send it if it's a public hearing and we can't make comments?
Now, through the chair, I hate to disagree with planning because they're usually right on everything, but I'm going to have to in this instance. My recommendation would be to close the public hearing and then not pass second reading or even pass first reading and direct administration however you see fit. And then you can reopen a public hearing so long as you haven't gone through first or second reading.
Okay, my other question for staff is... in the Reeves Task Force in the Rocky View 2060, was this land included as commercial industrial?
Through the chair, we can check that. Of course, the most important document currently is the county plan, but we can check that information.
No, I realize that, but if you read the county plan, it also said that it took information from these two documents, so it does play a bit of an important part for me. While you guys are looking for that, I do have another question here. I noticed that you got on this application and not on the previous one. I'm just wondering if this is going to be a continuation. The regional growth plan, is this going to be included in all applications from here on in? And if it is, why wasn't it included on the last one?
Through the chair, much of the discussion around regional growth plan is still discussion to understand precisely the impact of it. Certainly, if there's no interest from an intermunicipal partner, we're relatively confident that there's unlikely to be issues from a growth plan perspective. Where we have questions asked from an intermunicipal partner about an application, our inclination is to include that because that represents a discussion that's still happening at the growth plan level. So, I mean, if we wanted to have a growth plan discussion about this application, happy to do that. As yet, we do not have a growth plan, even though this application would, of course, be required to comply with the growth plan. And if it didn't comply with the growth plan, the bylaw, if it was passed, of course, is invalid. But unless the council really wants to have a discussion about it, we can just leave it at that.
So I guess my question is, are we going to be seeing that in all applications from now on?
Through the chair, our intent is to bring it forward as an issue until such time as we have a growth plan in place, because it is a relevant consideration. Consistency, the growth plan does sit above our municipal development plan. It's a more significant document than our intermunicipal development plans as well, and so it is of course a significant consideration for council. And until such time as we have one, it's an unknown, I guess.
Okay, my last question, I think, for now will be, somebody wanted to send something like this here, another application for future. Is there any other process that it can go to IMC, or does it have to come to council and get first reading and then go to IMC?
Through the chair, if an intermunicipal partner requests a matter go before an IMC meeting, typically we'll just send those matters to an IMC meeting. As you see in this case, the City of Calgary was only interested in seeing it if it was a recommendation for approval. Of course, if Council's intent was to approve that, I'm sure they'd be interested in seeing it.
Okay, that's all the questions I have for now.
Thank you. Deputy Reeve-Gautreau.
Thank you, through the Reeve. Was this in the Shepherd ASP, these lands?
I don't believe it was. I guess I'd have to defer to planning, but I think the Shepherd ASP cut off right at 284 before annexation.
Okay, I'll ask them that question. Can you tell me what's around Norman Place?
Yeah, so Norman Place, Jamie, I wonder if we can pull my... I don't have a keyboard to be able to go back here. Here we go. Do it this way. So Norman Place currently comes in, I'll just zoom in on this, currently comes in to a cul-de-sac right here. So here's Range Road 283, and this is Norman Place. This site here was, I remember watching this through the years. It was a kind of a strange location. It was storage, personal storage for a while. They had to build a retaining wall along here, and the retaining wall fell down, and they had to rebuild it. And it was always kind of humorous to come to this corner and see what was happening on this development. It's cleaned up a lot now, and so there was a pipe company in there. There is some concrete stuff. Lafarge, I believe, is the owner of this one now, and recycling of concrete and asphalt. Just down over here, as I say, is a sour gas facility. A trucking company owns this piece right here. This part right here is being used for storage, for outdoor storage as well. And then this piece here is, in my understanding, it's in dispute between a buyer and a seller right now for completion. This piece here, I've spoken to the owner of this parcel up here. He would love to get a change of land use, but again, because Alberta Transportation has a plan to put an interchange in here, there's quite a curve that's taken off, reserved for future use for Alberta Transportation. And so my advice to him is it'd be very difficult to get a change of land use on the full piece.
Can you tell me what, on 284... even if you go just south of 284, what's south of 284?
Yeah, so if you go further down south, there's more industrial work. You can see the purple areas in behind the wording here. So this is a trucking company down here. This is zoned as IIS, but it's actually, there's a two-story office building in there and some shops. I believe it's a construction company. Over here, this is industrial. And, of course, in here, most of this is SFUD by the City of Calgary, but the City of Calgary has even rezoned a part of their property into IG. Further down, you've got the CP consolidation. And, as you look at this whole area, you see that the steps are being taken slowly but surely, covertly, for CP to create something down here. So this is definitely in line with the city's growth plans to become an industrial corridor.
So just to the west then, we've seen the big MX power plant.
Right here.
What is continuing west from there?
A little bit further west, you have all of this is limited service industrial at this point. I wish I didn't have the red on top of it, but you can see that this is substantially developed in here. Again, this whole area has an area structure plan in place. As you come north into Janet in Rocky View County, you've got the same kind of development. It's all limited service industrial, a lot of trucking, logistics, that kind of work.
So I've heard from... Well, I'll give staff a minute to respond to this as well, but previous planning has told us that there's no pressure in this area just outside the Janet ASP. What's your opinion? Is there pressure? Is there not pressure within that area just outside the Janet ASP?
I lose my screen again. I know that we've seen significant interest from people that are not in the purple areas to be able to have their business. There's There is an interest right now in a different kind of industrial. Land prices in the city of Calgary start at about $700,000 an acre for fully serviced land. In Janet, on the market right now, limited service land starts at about $500,000 an acre. And if you can get out into some of these areas, your price drops lower. And so there are people who are looking for larger spaces for yards. You know, every week I have a sales meeting with my agents in my office, and the constant request is for industrial space with larger yards. And I think Janet has some of that to offer. In some respects. Maybe it's not even coming on fast enough for some people. I know the developer in this area, BD Developments, would love to get going on a development, but can't because they're in that second phase of development. So there is the pressure, and I mean we're in a different market. You know, it's always dangerous to predict the future, but there is a new sense of confidence coming out in the market, and people are looking to find new places that meet their needs. So while you can get land in the city of Calgary, it's expensive, it has services that maybe aren't required, and it's compressed, right? And so there is this need for trucking operations to be able to have more room to park their trucks, to be able to move them around. And so I think that's why you're seeing this pressure out here. And certainly we've got clients out here that are looking to increase that, to have more space to be able to move around.
And my last question is so the MX power plant, there was lots of agricultural holdings out through that area. We've seen Prairie Schooner right across the road. What has that done for the residents in that area, like since that plant came online?
All I can say is that I know that four and a half years ago, I walked Prairie Schooner Estates, and that was just after this thing was coming online. And the residents there were not happy. It reminded me very much of some of the stuff we saw in Conrich when all of a sudden CN was in there. That all of a sudden there's this thing that's there that impacts them. Their views are gone, and on some mornings the vapor, I'll call it, that comes off of that plant is enormous, and the noise is there. The people feel like they're living in an industrial yard.
Okay. And then I just go back to planning. I just wanted to know, like, I know that you guys commented before that there was no pressure in this area, but yet this is our third application in less than a month and a half. So do you feel now that there may be pressure within this area for growth? Or?
Through the chair, this is what I would expect. We're yet to hit the threshold for development of second phase for the Janet Area Structure Plan. Once we hit that, then there'll be the review of the Area Structure Plan to expand the industrial area. There's always demand for land that is cheaper than that land which is identified under policy or actually under land use. So particularly, as I've mentioned before, in fringe areas around the city of Calgary, if it's in what's identified as an agricultural area under the county plan, which this is, it will be the right price, and it can always attract this kind of development.
Yeah. Thank you.
Councillor Shule.
Okay, this is going to be, to staff again, this is going to be a different kind of a question here. If this land would have been in the Janet ASP, would this be considered more first phase than some of the future stuff in Janet? Because I'm just looking at, when I'm looking at the Janet area structure plan for the future, there's so much infrastructure, I believe, needs to be built before that can even happen. Am I correct?
Through the chair, there are some requirements in the Janet area structure plan for servicing to be addressed, including stormwater systems, and perhaps engineering can speak to that in more detail. You earlier asked a question about the growth management strategy. I've got that on the board now, and you'll see it cuts off exactly where we see it. In fact, even the area that's identified as minor business corridor seems to show it to the north of the road infrastructure there.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions for the applicant or administration? Seeing none, thank you very much. You can take, whoops, yes, there is.
Oh, no, I'm rushing there.
Okay. We'll now ask for those in favor, those wishing to speak in favor, to come forward. I have no one on list here, so seeing no one coming forward, I would ask for those in opposition. And we do have one, Saran Rambochan. You can cure my pronunciation of, I'm sorry if I butchered your name.
You are very close. So it's Saran Ramnuchin. I'm one of the owner. We're not against development in that particular area. We already own land in that area, in Norman Place. Lafarge is one of our is our tenant, and our concern is more in terms of what kind of development will happen over there. We already industrial, and we do have cement recycling. There's dust in that area. We do have dust mitigation. So rather than being in we are not opposing industrial development in that area, but we just want to know what kind of development is going to happen. And the other concern we have, we've been here for 2 years, and we've been dealing with a lot of water management issues in terms of storm management issues. We know that we helped develop the Norman Place Road, and the applicant want to extend that road, I believe, from what we heard today. What kind of mitigation strategies do they have in terms of dealing with this additional water? Based on the land, the topography of the land where we are lot four, we are on the lower end, so a lot of water comes to our land. So that's those are the concerns we have, rather than a direct opposition to this development.
Thank you. Well, the applicant will be allowed to rebut, so he may have some answers to some of your questions. Deputy Reeve Gautreaux.
Thank you, through the chair, sir. Can you tell me when your development was first took place? What year?
We got into line in 2016. We went through the application process here.
For the total Norman Place, or?
No, we are one of the landowners. There were four lots, lot 1, 2, 3, and 4. We purchased lot 4. And our lot was industrial zoning at the time, industrial storage, and we are now industrial heavy activity.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I see no further questions.
Okay.
So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else would like to speak in opposition? Please come forward. And the applicant does have the right to rebut at this stage. Would you like some time to prepare? Or you're ready?
Not at all.
Okay, so I've just asked that you stick to anything you heard in opposition.
Yep. 2 points. One, you know, some might call this gentleman my straight man because he just illustrates the point that there's ash and dust flying up from their site on top of these two residential parcels. And so the best use that would be not conflicting with his use would be an industrial use. We have carefully in the DC bylaw pushed more of an IIA basis to the east and a BIC to the west. And the reason for doing that is to try to act as a bit of a transition. IIA being more in line with what's happening to our neighbors on the east, and then the BIC just in consideration of the Prairie Schooner Estates and not having more operations like a recycling plant or an energy plant spewing stuff on their houses. So with respect to that comment, I would say that we're actually going to improve things for them. With respect to other infrastructure, you know, in terms of the construction of the road that they built, we will actually make it better because there will be better access onto Norman's Place and certainly better access on Range Road 283 and Glenmore Trail or Highway 560. So it will improve those aspects too. In terms of stormwater, the land is really... you know, if I were to give a contour of it from the south going north, it's like this and then flows down. So it was a bit of a challenge. That'd be great if we could pull that up. Here's the peak of the land right up in here, and it all flows toward here. We have a limitation on the north side of the property from Alberta Transportation. This is where all the water is going to want to flow, is up toward Glenmore Trail. But we have this limitation that we can't develop down here. And so the stormwater engineer has proposed contouring of the lands and a PUL on this side and one that's in here. And perhaps I can clarify what's going on over here. In this strip, this dotted line here should not exist. So this parcel would, if it were to be subdivided, would have to be a horseshoe parcel, because this is a series of pipes that run underground here. So there's an easement. We can't use that land at all. It's dead land. And so the PUL, unfortunately, could not be put on top of the pipes. It had to be moved over. So the second PUL to deal with stormwater is here. So we do have the two stormwater ponds to deal with all of the storm that would come from these four parcels.
Great. Thank you very much. Any further questions? Deputy Reeve Gautreau.
Thank you. I just have one. This might be for Mr. Grande as well. Do you know if that sour gas plant or facility that I think you just said was on 283 going south. Is that being shut down or reclaimed?
Okay, so let's pull this one up. It sits right down in here. My understanding is that the well is suspended. They're waiting for some really good cold winters and for everybody to switch your vehicles over to natural gas so the price of gas comes up. It's supposed to be brought back online once the market recovers. Okay. So right now the plant is suspended, but it's not decommissioned.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, we'll go to Councillor Shule. Councillor's wish.
Okay, I'll motion to close.
Move to close the hearing. All in favour? And we are closed. Councillor Shule.
Okay, I'm going to definitely go with motion one, that we give it first reading for bylaw C77492/2018 be given first reading. I'm going to give you some of my reasoning here. Definitely it's an infill. I cannot see that being farmland, and it's driving by there and just what the presenter showed us, it shows it as an infill and it's not farmland. I also like the idea that the mention about improvements to access. I mean, we have an opportunity here at Glenmore Trail on that that road going to Chestmere, the back road, and going down to this other industrial area. It definitely needs improvements, and I mean, we have an opportunity to see that. I do definitely understand it's most likely has to go to intermunicipal IMC with Calgary, and I have no problem with that. I do strongly believe that this Glenmore Trail has been missed in the county plan. I strongly believe that that's just it is a major corridor. I wasn't involved, and I don't know what the reasoning why it was excluded, but I think it's there is going to be a lot of pressure coming online on Glenmore Trail just from the people I've talked to in the past and recently. So I guess I'll leave it at that. So I really hope I get you guys' support. Thank you.
Councillor Wright.
Sorry, Councillor Shule, I won't be supporting that motion. I'm going to side with administration on this. I do, I understand that it is an infill, and it's sort of caught between a rock and a hard place. When Mr. Grande asked for approval today, it's not that it can't be approved ever, but I just do not believe that today is the day to do that. Just because of the agreements that we do have in place with, the unknown agreements that we have in place with Calgary. As well, we do have areas approved for growth and in the Janet plan just being right across the road, and I think that we do have people who've bought into that, and I think we should preserve the integrity of those who've already bought into areas that have already been defined for growth, and I think we should build those out first before going elsewhere. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hanson.
Can I ask a question of administration if the hearing is closed? No, sorry.
Unless it's procedurally.
Okay.
Sorry.
Let me ponder my thoughts a bit more.
Deputy Reeve Gautreau.
Thank you, through the chair. I am going to support Councillor Shule's motion here. And my reasonings are is we have an MX power plant that came online and really disrupted that entire area. It goes quite a ways. I mean, you can see that plume for forever. And it has given that whole area redesignation. That entire piece of property is surrounded by industrial. And I look at it going from 284 straight down 114th that you showed on the map is industrial. You've got Norma Place, which is industrial, which, you know, one state's 2015, but I'm sure that place has been there longer than that. You know, and I just look at the entire Glenmore Trail corridor where it has missed the boat. I know that, you know, we can talk about the Reeves Task Force, we can talk about 2060. We know that those documents were put in place and given some thought to in regards to. Maybe it was missed in the county plan. I'm not sure. But I'm going to support that on that whole motion because I think this entire area, it sits right on industrial. So I'm going to support his motion.
Thank you. If you could give up your mic, or are you done? Oh, you did. Thank you. Councillor McCullough.
Thank you. Through the Reeve. I will also be supporting this motion. I think that the lands directly to the east have already predetermined the outcome for this quarter, so I will be supporting this motion.
Councillor Comanche.
Through the Reeve. Yeah, given that, you know, it seems quite obvious what this land would be designated for, I can support Councillor Shields' motion. At the same time, though, giving this first reading to address areas of the Janet Area Structure Plan, that still becomes part of the conversation, if correct? Through to admin?
No more information.
Okay. then I'll shut up.
Thank you. And Councillor Hansen.
Normally, I'm a pretty strong advocate for keeping our development inside Janet. This particular application piques my interest a little bit. I partially support it. I could probably support first reading, but I do really see this as a City of Calgary Shepherd Industrial ASP expansion exercise or something along those lines. It's a pretty special piece of property being fronted on Glenmore Trail, and be ashamed to waste the long-term development potential of that chunk of land and not maximize revenue for the sake of a couple of big industrial lots, because you do not need, in my opinion, big industrial lots right beside Glenmore Trail. You probably need a little higher intensity development that's going to generate more tax revenue either for us in the short term or for the City of Calgary in the long term. So partial support for me. I would not mind if some more joint planning was done with the IMC and maybe somehow relate that to the Shepherd Industrial ASP or something that makes good development sense. So perhaps the timing to start is now, and maybe the final execution comes sometime in the future once the IMC's decided what exactly they should do and what the phasing is like with their area structure plan in Shepherd. We were told that you just want to continue on that same spirit of development that's in Shepherd further east, but there's a lot of green space there in Shepherd that could be developed first, perhaps.
Thank you. Before I call the question, I'm sorry, I cannot support this either.
Can I close too?
Pardon me?
Can I close before you call the question?
Yeah, you sure can. I think we're missing one really integral part of this, and that is the Calgary Growth Corridor that was negotiated in the 2007 annexation. It is an area that is reserved for Calgary, and I'm sorry, but you know, I go to page 39. A fragmented ownership adjacent to the municipal boundary is disadvantaged to comprehensive development of Calgary's growth area. It is our preference and general understanding that future urban growth corridors, especially those adjacent to the municipal boundary, will be maintained as unfragmented as possible. That is saying don't pass this. That is saying if you do pass it, the next paragraph does, and I will agree with the applicant that it does say bring it to an IMC. They want to discuss it. If this was a viable operation, perhaps the applicant should have gone to the city and got a written agreement with the development that would have helped at that point. We do have an area structure plan. The right across the road, there's plenty of land there yet to be developed. People that are there have already, and we did this a week ago and talked about the people that were there that have paid the extra to be in those areas deserve the right to be have that area built out to a certain percentage before new comes. I agree with the applicant when he says this is a commercial and industrial corridor. It absolutely is. It's just not right now. So I will, if Councillor Shul, if you wish to close, I don't see anyone else wanting to speak, so go ahead.
Okay. I guess in further to your comments, I do believe we need to hear from the IMC, but I also asked that what is the process before, if there was an opportunity to bring this to IMC, or does this need to go and get first reading? The understanding I got that we have to give it first reading and then send it to IMC. So now there's an opportunity to address what some of these concerns are. I know I can't make those kind of comments, so I'll be quiet on that. So I just think this, seriously, this is a commercial area, industrial area. I don't understand why we would be, it's not farmland. These people are stuck in no man's land. I do believe that there was an issue with the county plan that it did exclude some of these lands. So I guess I really hope that we can get enough support to send this to Calgary. Thank you.
Thank you. We will call the question for first reading. Did you read off the motion one? I can't remember.
Yes, I did.
Okay. All in favor? And we need a recorded vote. Councillor Kissel?
In favor.
Opposed.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
Opposed.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
That is carried. We need some motion for second reading.
I'm trying to understand, how do we send this through IMC now? So the understanding, I don't want to see this thing get lost in second reading here, so I'd like to really understand the process now.
Through the chair. So what I'm hearing, Councillor Shul, is that you'd like to make a motion for administration to have this matter discussed at an IMC meeting. Is that correct? Okay, perhaps Tyler could. Would you look at that?
Okay, that the administration be directed to refer application PL 2017-0070 to the City of Calgary Rocky View Intermunicipal Committee.
Do we need to table this to that meeting, or just stop here and do that?
In my opinion, Mr. Reeve, the first reading has passed, and at this point you're giving administration direction to go do something before you make another motion. So I think you're procedurally okay.
Good. Okay, all in favor? And that, I believe, is carried. It's carried. It'll be off to the IMC. We'll take a 10-minute break, and then I think if we can, we'll come back.
Good morning, Chair and Council members. My name is Xin Deng, Municipal Planner, representing Planning Services. The subject land is located approximately 1 mile north of Highway 1A and west of 12-mile Cooley Road. The purpose of this application is to create a 2.29-acre parcel, we call Lot 1, with a 6.98-acre remainder, we call Lot 2. The existing dwelling is serviced by existing water well and the septic tank and the field system. The property can be accessed via the existing approach of a 12-mile Cooley Road. About the water, new lot 2 will be serviced with a pipe water. As a subdivision condition, a confirmation letter from the Rocky View Water Co-op will be required. About the wastewater, the applicant submitted a level 3 PSTS assessment. It concluded that the Lot 2 is suitable for a packaged sewage treatment system. About access, the applicant will be required to construct a new paved mutual porch of a bare spillway to access both Lot 1 and Lot 2. The applicant will also be required to enter into a road acquisition agreement for purchasing a portion of the panhandle and the panhandle in adjacent parcel to the north. The land falls within the Bearspaw Air Structure Plan. The ASP requires a concept plan for proposal with lots less than 4 acres, which is this case. The applicant prepare a shadow plan and a technical studies. Those documents demonstrated the developability of the site and achieved the objectives of a concept plan. Therefore, administration recommend that the requirement for a concept plan be waived. Application was circulated to 115 adjacent landowners, and no letters were received. If a council waived the requirement of a concept plan, the proposal would meet the subdivision requirement of the Bearspaw ASP. Other technical aspects can be addressed through the subdivision conditions. Therefore, administration recommends approval in accordance with option one. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Wright.
Through the chair to administration, I was speaking with engineering a little earlier, but I'll just get some clarification, I think, on a couple of issues more for all the rest of council, too. There's a comment in the executive summary that says, given the limited potential for further development, it is considered that a concept scheme is unnecessary, yet we have a shadow plan that shows further development. So moving forward, are we just saying that these two parcels don't need a concept plan, or will the concept plan be needed on the next division or the next phase, or, again, is that just a council's wish?
Through the chair. So the requirement under the Bearspaw Area Structure Plan is that any time you're going less than 4 acres, it identifies a range of areas which require concept schemes. Then, in addition to that, it has a second layer which requires it in the case of any proposal for lot sizes with less than 4 acres, as in this instance. The assessment by administration concluded that there's relatively limited future development in this overall area, albeit there is some ability for future development in that parcel that you see that's on the screen. So it was considered that a concept scheme was likely overkill in this instance. So the suggestion and the recommendation to waive the requirement for a concept scheme comes from this assessment. So our assessment concludes that there is future development, so it's important to identify how that would look, but we can do that in the form of a shadow plan similar to a lot and road plan rather than go to the additional expense and complication for a relatively small development of requiring a full-blown concept scheme.
Maybe I want to add something.
Yes, please.
Usually a concept plan will be required for a whole quarter section that has been really fragmented. That was make benefit for the concept plan, because concept plan will consider the future subdivision pattern, servicings, and infrastructure. In this case, as Matthew said, the quarter section has been previously fragmented and subdivided. Most parcel has reached their 2 acres, 4 acres, which means there's no much further subdivision potential. So that's why we feel in this case, shadow plan would achieve that objective of a concept plan. So therefore, concept plan may not be needed or benefited in this case.
So concept plans are only needed in a quarter section, and under the Bearspaw Area Structure Plan, there's probably 3 left in all of Bearspaw. So maybe that policy needs to be looked at. I guess I'm a little concerned, though, I understand that we're just dividing this into the two segments at this particular moment, but it's the moving forward. This is 2 acres today, and so are we going to need a concept plan down the road, or is that going to be recommended against as well? Are we really only using concept plans when we're talking the bigger sections? Because that causes, being that water is such an issue in Bearspaw, and when you look at the bigger map, there's water all over the place. My concern would be that. So I know that this particular applicant, I'm more concerned about what's going to happen on future development, and the way that this is worded sounds a little off to me.
Through the chair, so the subsequent stages would be simply addressed in the same fashion you see here. There'd be a subdivision application. The technical requirements, which would include analysis of stormwater, would need to be addressed, but they could, provided council waives the requirement, proceed forward without that conceptual scheme requirement. Of course, there's an ability for council to say, yes, we require a concept scheme in this situation. Our recommendation is that it's not required. We still feel that the technical issues, including stormwater, have been adequately addressed for this application and can be adequately addressed in the subsequent subdivision applications. But that option is, of course, available to council to require that now.
Right. So further down the road, then, we have the ability to look at it more in depth if we start going down to these proposed 1.98 acres and that kind of stuff, correct?
Through the chair, that's absolutely correct. At this stage, we would anticipate it still wouldn't be required a concept scheme, but that analysis is yet to occur in that level of detail.
Mr. Riemann would like to clarify a little bit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to add to that, and what you're seeing with this application in front of you is a list of technical requirements. Should this go to the next stage and have further densification, you will again see a list of technical requirements that council will be able to say yes to or no to, depending on their nature of what they feel is adequate for the application at hand.
Would the in the future, would the stormwater plan, I presume even the site-specific, would need to adhere to the master plan?
Now that's correct. And even if you look at today's conditions, condition number two, that's exactly what it references, is to make sure that the concept site-specific stormwater management plan meets the Bearspaw Glenbow master drainage plan.
Thank you.
It also says a deferred services agreement would be required to be registered on both proposed lots 1 and 2, requiring the owner to tie into a municipal piped wastewater and stormwater when they become available. So that's for lot 2 specifically?
If it
was subdivided further, is that where we're going with that?
We're looking at the potential, and so as we continue to craft conditions and as we start looking at future servicing obligations or opportunities, we put the deferred services caveat on top of these titles so that if and when there is a regional decentralized system in the area, we can actually look to these landowners to hook into that system.
Okay, thank you.
Seeing no questions, we'll go to Councillor Wright.
So at this time, then, I'll ask to close the meeting.
Actually,
hearing? No, we don't close it, do we?
Meeting's
okay.
Closed.
Oh, sorry. Hearing. I keep saying meeting and not hearing. So option one, I'm going to like to make a motion at this time for option one, that the requirement for concept plan and policy 8.1.21 of the Bearspaw Area Structure Plan be waived. And motion, do you want me to read them both at the same time? Motion 2, that subdivision application PL2017-0177 be approved with the conditions noted in Appendix A.
All in favour? And that is carried. Thank you. We'll go to J2. And we have a request from the applicant to address council. So I'd need a motion to that effect. I am getting to the point here where I think we have public hearings to hear from the applicants, and we have an appeal system if you're not happy with the conditions, to appeal the conditions. So I'm getting to where we have our public hearings, and these aren't, but I'll still entertain a motion. If Councillor Schull, do you have that?
Yes, I'd like to make the motion so Mr. Schneider could come and speak.
Okay, we have a motion to allow Mr. Schneider to speak. All in favor? And recorded vote. Councillor Kissel.
Approved. Okay, how about we try in favor? How does that work? I can't remember what I was. In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
I'm opposed.
In the spirit of the Reeves comments, I'm opposed as well.
In favor.
In favor.
And that is carried. Mr. Schneider, you'll be allowed to speak to council once we hear the report. Thank you.
Morning, Mr. Reeve and council members. Paul Simon representing Planning Services. Item J2 is situated within Division 4, approximately 1.2 kilometers east of Range Road 283 on the south side of Township Road 232. Subject lands are designated Farmstead and Business Industrial Campus District. You will notice that they currently contain split zoning. Surrounding lands are designated agriculture. Purpose of this application is to create a 4-acre parcel, being the Farmstead parcel in the northeast corner here, with a 10.67 acre remainder, being the Business Industrial Campus remainder here, identified as Lot 2. Access is currently available from an existing approach off of Township Road 232. As a condition of subdivision, the applicant will be required to upgrade this to a mutual industrial paved standard in order to provide access to proposed lots 1 and 2. Township Road 232 is a Network B road, and as such, development of new approaches should be limited in accordance with Policy 410, being the road access control policy. As a condition of subdivision, a traffic impact assessment is also required to determine impacts to the surrounding road network, given that the remainder is zoned industrial. The applicant will also be required to submit a site-specific stormwater management plan, which meets the requirements of the Shepherd Regional Drainage Plan, as a condition of subdivision. Payment of the transportation offsite levy is applicable for the remainder here, the Business Industrial Campus parcel, and is not applicable on the Farmstead parcel in accordance with the TOL bylaw. Municipal reserves are recommended to be collected in full for the Farmstead parcel. Generally, farmsteads are exempt from requiring payment of municipal reserves. However, this is not considered a first parcel out application given the current fragmentation of the corridor, so it is recommended that reserves are collected in full. Reserves for Lot 2 are recommended to be deferred given that further subdivision potential does exist, as the minimum parcel size for the Business Industrial Campus District is 2.5 acres. Proposed Lot 1, being the Farmstead parcel, is currently developed with one dwelling, single detached. Proposed Lot 2, being the Business Industrial Campus parcel, has one small accessory building with some associated outside storage. The Farmstead parcel is currently serviced via an existing private sewage treatment system and water well. The applicant did submit a Level 1 variation assessment in support of the application. Proposed Lot 2 has not had servicing determined at this point. As development does proceed, the use of holding tanks and water cisterns may be supported in accordance with county policy. This would ultimately be confirmed at future development permit and or subdivision stage. So you can see from the following site inspection photos, this is the approach that is proposed to be upgraded in the recommended conditions of approval. We are looking west here on Township Road 232. And then the picture on the bottom here kind of gives council an idea from the road, Township Road 232, what the remainder lands, the Business Industrial Campus lands, look like. The proposal was circulated to 42 adjacent landowners. No letters in support or opposition of the application were received. Overall, the lands hold the appropriate designation to support further subdivision, and all technical matters are addressed through the proposed conditions of approval. Therefore, administration recommends approval in accordance with option one. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now ask Mr. Schneider to come forward and talk to us. I'd like to recognize former councillor Rolly Ashdown gracing us with his presence, drinking our coffee. There you go. Mr. Schneider, could you state your name for the record, please?
Yeah, my name is Paul Schneider, and I'm doing the application for the owners. I have a few items. When I made the application, I made it for the existing residential approach and also putting in a commercial approach on the commercial section. Part of why I wanted the two separate approaches is, as at present, there's a, and it could be anybody, the tenants has a young boy. When the school bus comes to pick him up, they stop on the road, back into the approach, then let the child into the bus. And I think if we had a commercial trucks coming and going on that approach, it could be very dangerous, and it, you know, we could see someone getting killed easily just with the confusion of the kid starts running across to the bus and truck comes or goes off the highway. The speed limit on that road is 80 kilometers an hour. The other thing is this application was made early in the year, and on in July, which is the last two pages of the form, the county approved another approach to those industrial lots. When I subdivided those two 2.5-acre lots, we put in a commercial and mutual approach. But I guess the whoever approves it figured that there was not that many approaches and put an okayed approval for another approach to a 2.5-acre lot. And I think, you know, for the commercial industrial lot for the future, I mean, access, it's 10.5 acres, so I think they would need a commercial approach separate from the residential. I think we'd like to keep those two separate, both for, you know, future use. Also, they want a stormwater management for the commercial site, but I think it's too premature because we don't know what's going to be developed on there. And I brought some pictures here, and that is the industrial lot there. And you can see the approach kind of in the snow is the approach they approved to the, that's the approach that was approved by this application. And the mutual approach was put to the more to the left there. And also, if we go up to the last two pictures, that's another picture of the same building. But you can see that the tree line, kind of there's a post there, and on the kind of the right center, there's an evergreen fence. And it's more seen in 17 of the package. Yeah, that one. The fence line is a dotted going north and south. And if you look closer, you can see there's an evergreen fence there, plus a lot of shrubs, which if we did a mutual approach, a lot of that trees would have to be removed. And it works as a good shelter belt from the northwest winds right now. The other thing is I'd like to do away, not have the transportation impact study done at this stage, as we have no idea what's going to happen on that industrial use. There's all kinds, there could be a lot of traffic, there could be next to no traffic on that. So I think those would be done, stormwater and the traffic would be done at the development permit stage and or subdivision of the commercial. So those are, the other thing is the first picture. Can I have the first picture back? Okay, that's at the corner of Range Road 232 and Township Road 283. Is it okay if I have a drink of water? I just wanted to point out that that's a fairly big industrial area there, and there's a lot more industrial up that road right to Gunmore, as you'd already heard in the earlier sessions about a number of commercial and industrial spots. We are not making any application for any rezoning in this. It just sort of they mentioned about this being, and this is only less than a kilometer away from the said lands. So you can see, a little hard to see, but there's a lot of vehicles already just parked in the parking lot there. There's a big shop there, and to the right, it's a little blurred out, but that's a two-story office building. So that's all I would like to do. I'm in favor of all the other conditions in there, other than the three, one about the approach, one about the stormwater, and one about the transportation impact study.
Thank you. Councillor Shule.
I need some clarification on this here. I'm having trouble understanding this a bit on this approach. Are we asking to delete this approach? Or I guess I'm a little confused here right now because usually people ask not to put another driveway in. In this case, we're asking for another driveway. So do I need some clarity here, please?
Through Mr. Chair to Councillor Shule, what the recommendation and as the conditions are set for Council's consideration is we are looking for that approach that is currently being highlighted there by the pointer to to be turned into a mutual approach that would service both the existing farmstead and the future industrial commercial. As provided within the presentation, we are trying to eliminate the amount of or the number of approaches onto 232 because of the network importance of Township Road 232 itself.
That's okay. Is there enough distance to have another approach? I can see what Mr. Schneider is saying, if there's residential there for safety issues. So is there any other thing that would hinder putting another approach in?
Because there is not an intersection per se that may infringe upon our servicing standards in terms of when approach or how approach should access onto a road, I can't see a complication there. But what you are starting to see is the continuation of multiple approaches being accessing onto a 232 that if the road, when the road gets expanded to a future network need, there will be complications on how we're going to deal with those approaches.
Is there a future in the near future upgrades going to that road?
So as indicated in the report, the road is a Network B road, which means it is a road of importance for the county. It is under our transportation plan, under our transportation levy bylaw. It is a secondary access point into the city from Langdon and others. So I think it has have some future expansions coming down the pipe.
Like, is it a five-year plan, anything in the horizon?
It is not on our 10-year current program.
Okay, my other question, I do recognize the reasoning for stormwater and transportation studies, but I do understand what Mr. Schneider was saying also, is sometimes when you don't know the usages, there are different types of transportation studies or stormwaters that he can do that to satisfy you without the county without spending a large amount of money just to satisfy this portion.
Through Mr. Chair, and I think what you're hearing from the applicant is deferring those studies to the point where a DP is actually made and applied for a specific use. And I think from our perspective, and when we are creating a subdivision and creating a lot, we want to make sure that that lot is viable. And so these studies are conditionalized to make sure that the creation of the lot can be supported by whatever the future need is. So council's decision on whether they want to see those studies now or whether they feel it's appropriate to defer it to the DP. But from an administrative perspective, when we are creating a lot, it is up to us to make sure that we create conditions to support the creation of that lot.
I know in some areas you pretty well need it done because there's a lot of wetlands and a lot of stormwater. Do you feel that this one is really necessary prior, or can it be addressed at development permit, I guess? Hate putting you in a spot like that, but question.
Through you, Mr. Chair, the area is a fairly low-lying area. It does have limited abilities for drainage. Whether you do it now or do it at a DP stage, you're either asking the applicant to create a scenario where it's viable or you're pushing on that need and that expense to a future DP holder or DP applicant to do the study.
I thank you, Mr. Schneider. I think you can take your seat. No, I think I'm going to stop it there. You've made your point, and I thank you for it. That's fine. I said no. Thank you. Okay, Councillor Shule.
Okay, I'm going to try to figure out which one what we need to address that driveway. I'd like to make sure that we do get another driveway in there, and I hope we get support. I'm looking at safety issues, so that's why I'm going to ask staff what would we need to change here to allow him to put in that other driveway or separate driveway.
Through the chair, if you'd like some support in preparing some amendments, we're happy to do that and take a short break if that suits council.
Sounds good. Yep.
The west boundary, could that not be made into a dual approach?
To your support, Mr. Chairman, that's exactly what we were going to suggest to the councillor.
It's a gift. What can I say? Thank you. We'll call the meeting back to order and go to Councillor Shule.
Okay, I'll go with that the condition 4 and 5 in Schedule A be deleted and that the condition 4 be replaced with the following, that the owner shall construct a new paved approach on Township 232 in order to provide access to Lot 2 as per the revised tentative plan in accordance with the county servicing standards.
Mr. Chair, just as clarity here, and more so speaking from the top one there, I just noted condition 4 or 5 are dealing with the stormwater management.
Okay, so yeah, okay, let's take that thing off for now. That's going to be another discussion. Sorry about that. Okay, I'm going to just start all over here.
Go ahead.
Okay, that condition 2 in Schedule A be replaced with the following. That makes more sense. The owner shall construct a new paved approach on Township 232 in order to provide access to Lot 2 as per the revised tentative plan in accordance with the county servicing standard. I'll make that motion.
Okay. Do we know what the distance is between the two? The proposed and the existing to the farmstead that...
We can get that for you in a few seconds here.
I'd kind of like to know that. I think... I don't know how big that piece of property is, but they look pretty close together.
That's why I asked if there's going to be a problem, and they said no, so...
Can you get that up on the map again, please?
So just ballpark, Mr. Chair, from that existing approach to where we're suggesting the new approach, you'd have about 90 meters.
90? 200, 300 feet. Okay. Councillor
Shule. I'd like to make that motion for the driveway addition that I just mentioned.
Yeah, it's been made. Any comments? Deputy. Okay. Did you want to make a comment? Oh.
Can we not,
Councillor Wright.
Sorry, yeah, through the chair, can we not have a shared driveway with the residents? Like, can it not be moved over that way more?
That is what is proposed, and the applicant didn't want that.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Okay, call the question. All in favor? And recorded vote?
Approved. An A-OK.
Opposed.
In favor.
Opposed.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
Opposed. In favor.
That is carried. Councillor Shule.
I want to try one more here. I know the transportation one I have no issue with. I think that has to be done. The stormwater is the one that I have a bit of a problem asking applicants to do that until... And I would like it deferred to development permit. For a reason is we don't know what's going to be on there. We don't know what kind of a driveway. We don't know what kind of parking building. We don't know what kind of large buildings there are going to be. So the whole stormwater that is done now will have to be totally redone in the future. So those are my reasons. So that condition 4 and 5 in Schedule A be deferred until the development permit stage.
Okay, any comments? Councillor Hanson.
I will not be supporting that. The viability of the subdivision has to be proved at subdivision time. I totally agree with the administration on this. And the land has to be proven to be fit for use. So,
Deputy Reeve Gautreau.
So just a question for administration. And let's just say this was deferred until development stage. What does that give us a better insight of really what the stormwater management plan is? But I just want to go back a little bit further. I'll go back to the beginning for a second. What stormwater management plan do they have to do? Is it just a technical saying, yes, we can handle it, and then when we get into the DP stage, it's more intense?
Almost yes to both of those through you, Mr. Chair. And so the initial concept when you are creating a lot and its viability is what and how will that lot deal with its stormwater coming off of that property? When we go into a DP stage, you then start to see further details and trying to ensure that the initial concept of the creation of that lot can be followed. And so our concern and why you see the recommendation as a condition of subdivision is you need to have that viability established before you hand it off to someone else in a DP stage, because what at the DP stage, it can't be implemented or the costs are so great that it's unviable. And so we want to make sure there's at least a concept under the creation of the lot that stormwater management and the principles around stormwater management can be carried out with the creation of that lot and that zoning.
So really then looking at the forefront then, it's not a huge expense just to get an engineer to say, yes, this lot can have it, but we don't really know what today's going to work like. But because if we don't know what's going to be on the lot, then it's really hard to say what stormwater management might need.
Correct. You're looking for validation. You're trying to create a validation that this lot gets created, and here is how it will accommodate some sort of stormwater management principles, whether it be a creation of a pond, a PUL, some sort of drainage to a tributary, wherever it may exist within that area. But then when you go into a DP stage and you're building a building, all you're trying to validate then is the square footage of the building itself and the hard surface. Can it actually meet the intent of what was initially contemplated under the creation of the lot itself? So it's a balance of making sure that it's consistent with the creation of the lot.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Wright.
Through the chair. Well, I guess if we don't know what's going there, I guess we didn't know where we could really put a road either. So I'll be with Councillor Hansen on this one. I won't be supporting the motion.
And Councillor Kissel.
I just have a question. You were talking about the two phases of a stormwater management. Can the first one actually be done through a memo? I've seen that on different applications, and I'm just curious as to how that actually works.
Through you, Mr. Chair, it really depends on the technical content of the memo and what's been included within it. But, I mean, we would look at it and consider if it's viable compared to our servicing standards or not.
Okay. I see no further questions. I'll give you another chance. Anybody have another question? Seeing none, we'll call the question to delete conditions 4 and 5. All in favor? And recorded vote, starting with Councillor Kissel.
In favor. No, I'm opposed today. Opposed.
Opposed.
In favor.
In favor.
Opposed.
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 And that is defeated. Councillor Shule.
Boy, that was a close one. I'll make a motion that option one, the subdivision application PL2017013 be approved with the conditions and plus the amendments, or how do I go? Okay, as amended.
All in favor? And that is carried. Can I get a motion to go in camera for K1 and K2?
And 3.
I don't want 3. Well, let's have 3 up there after.
Okay.
Okay. Can someone make that motion? Councillor Hansen.
I'd like to move that council move in camera to consider the in-camera reports, Cochrane Lakes Monterra Developments, and BREC Real Estate Purchase Agreement status update, pursuant to the following sections of the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act, Section 21, Disclosure Harmful to Intergovernmental Relations, Section 24, Advice from Officials, and Section 27, Privileged Information.
All in favor? And that is carried. We're in camera. We'll go for the lunch break. Getting back to order, could I get a motion to come out of camera? Councillor Hinn.
I move to come out of camera. K1.
Thank you. All in favor? K1 and 2.
And 2.
And 2. Good. So now we need a motion. Here they are. Councillor Kissel, are you prepared to make these motions?
I'm prepared to make the first one.
Can I get you to turn your. Yeah.
Okay. That administration
initiate and coordinate communications with the interested parties of Cochrane Lakes development area to address concerns that have been raised to ensure consistent messaging.
Okay, and we will sever these motions. We'll keep them separate. So, all in favor? That is carried.
Yeah, I'm just checking it before I read it. That the administration be directed to respond to any inquiries from legal counsel for any of the interested parties of Cochrane Lake development area. And then we'll do the next
one. No debate. All in favor? That too is carried.
Okay, and I'll move that the in-camera report, Cochrane Lake Montero developments, discussions, any related articles remain confidential as attachments are considered advice from administration and contain privileged information. As a result, they are protected from disclosure under the Section 24 and 27 of the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act.
Thank you. See no debate. All in favor? And that is carried. We'll carry on to E1, Master Rates Bylaw.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Reeve, members of council. My name is Angie Kybel. I'm the manager of legislative and legal services for Rocky View County. I'm just going to be the person with the cover report, and I have all of the managers here today to talk about these particulars of the fees that are included within. So I'm going to start today by talking about user fee theory, some of the reasons why we would charge user fees, the Rocky View method, the 2018 changes, and the council decision that's required. So under the Municipal Government Act, in actually several sections, I've highlighted two for you today. Section 8 of the Municipal Government Act authorizes council to set fees and monetary penalties. Another section to be of note is Section 630.1, which allows council to set planning and development fees. So what are user fees? So municipalities, as you're aware, have three sources of revenue. The first is government transfers. So that would be from the provincial or federal government or even from other levels of municipal or other municipal government bodies. The second source is property taxes. And the third is service charges. So in other words, the user fees. As government transfers decreased, municipalities made some tough decisions. Should we increase the property taxes in response to those decreased transfers, or should we have user fee increases? So why should you charge a user fee? One reason, the most obvious, is to produce some revenue to offset the costs. The second is to promote efficient use of a good or service. For example, you may want to charge extra for garbage or sewer overuse to discourage that kind of behavior and that kind of additional production of something that you deem not to be a good thing. You also may want to subsidize some fees for a social good or to encourage some type of behavior. Some municipalities subsidize recreation, bus passes, that sort of thing. And the subsidies are usually offset by property taxes. The Rocky View method for each year. So you'll notice that you have a 2018 Master Rates Bylaw. And I'm not sure if you've had a chance, but the 2017 Master Rates Bylaw is on our website currently. And what we do at Rocky View, what we've done in the past, is incremental fee setting. So we have a look at what was charged in the past. We review it, see if it's still appropriate, and possibly make some incremental adjustments therefrom. We also do strategic analysis on certain fees or add fees where there's a new service. So as I said, the managers from the relevant departments are here today to answer questions that council may have. But I'm available too if you have any questions of me.
Gee, it looks like we're ready for a motion. Any questions? Any comments? Councillor Shule.
Actually, I'm going to start something here. Maybe I'm not sure where it's going to go.
But I'm looking at some of these rates increases in the Conridge area, in the Bear Creek area, and I still think that this is a premature to be bringing this forward until we do our budget. So I'm going to really try something here just to save time. I'm going to ask to table this until our budget is complete, and then I think then it's to be a proper process in my mind to be dealing with the master rates.
Mr. Reeve, if I could perhaps get some procedural advice on that. As we discussed, the tabling of a motion normally comes after a motion is on the floor. Currently, there is no motion on the floor. Therefore, may I suggest that if Councillor Scholl is amenable to it, that it's not a tabling motion, but that administration be directed to bring the master rates bylaw back after the budget is passed. Thank you. I thought so.
Well, this one then we can speak to. Councillor Hansen.
So if we approve a master bylaw rate schedule, how hard is it to make an amendment partway through the year to make an adjustment for cost of sewage calculation, which is almost just an engineering calc at that point?
Through the Reeve to Councillor Hansen. This is a regular bylaw. It's not a planning bylaw that requires any sort of public hearing or notification or advertisement. So any amendment to it would go through the normal process of three readings. And those three readings, given Council's current practice of doing three readings in one meeting, could be accomplished in one meeting. So it would just be an amending bylaw to amend whatever fee that Council saw fit.
May I suggest to Councillor Scholl a path forward along those lines?
Councillor Comanche.
Just to what, through the Reeve, if that opens it up to first, second, third readings, that allows public participation, it's not a hearing, right?
That's correct. It's not a public hearing.
I guess to Councillor Shule's point, too, again, it was brought up by several Bragg Creek residents that, they would like that consultation with regards to why the rates are what they stand for, everything from water, sewage, so... I would support what Councillor Scholl was recommending.
Deputy Reeve Control.
Thank you, through the Reeve. I'm going to have to agree with the motion that's on the board. With what Councillor Scholl has to say, I think we're premature. If we don't have a budget, how can we really do a master rates bylaw? And honestly, maybe these rates need to go up, maybe they need to go down, but I think we need to have a budget in place first before we really start looking at this process.
Well, being as how no one else, I disagree with that. I don't think the master rates bylaw has a huge effect on the budget. I don't know why we'd put this off. The councillors of the area, if people have questions, they should be directing their councillor to ask those questions and find out about what costs are and what charges are. And further to that, if we were to have a pass the master rates bylaw today, an amendment came along for water rates in Bray Creek, for example. That is one that's under question. We can amend it. It doesn't even take a public hearing. So I think it's a little more streamlined, but I'd actually ask either Mr. Woods or Mr. Robinson, give me the major effect this has on the budget. Maybe I'm dead wrong. I hope I am.
To the chair and to all of council, in terms of master rates bylaw, in the early part of the presentation that was given to you today, it talked about our different revenues that we have. And so the fees within the master rates bylaw do have an effect on our budget. There's no question. But I think what you're getting at is, are the proposed changes have a large effect on our budget? And I would suggest not. They're not easy to take in some cases, but keep in mind that most of the charges that we're talking about and we're talking about changing already exist within our current master rates bylaw in 2017. And so there are some proposed changes, there's no question, but the size and scope of those changes wouldn't have a huge effect on our 2018 budget.
Thank you. Councillor Scholl.
I'm still agreeing with that this should be done after our budget, but maybe I would like to add one more thing into here, that we may have the opportunity in between now and
when this comes back for some public input, especially from Brad Creek, Con Ridge area on their water rates, et cetera. I think we really need to hear the impact that is going to, from what I see, if I was a resident in any one of those areas, I would have deep concerns. So I really would like to hear from the residents some input from them to give the opportunity for that to happen. And secondly, then it may give us some, and I would like also the staff maybe even to look at different ways of, is there such a thing that maybe Brad Creek and some of these areas need to be subsidized? I'm just going on the history. I know people are going to shy away from that, but if you lived in Brad Creek and if you were the councillor of that area, I think we are a one big county and we need to help each other out. So this is, I'm just giving my little sales spiel here.
Councillor Comanche.
Through the reeve. Thanks, Al. Again, as I expressed to some councillors and through Mr. Robinson, you know, from a councillor doing his job, yeah, I get this panic call pretty much last night. But again, it's more of being able to sit down for them to have input into this, and I wish they would have reached out to me earlier to talk about things like that. But if putting the master rates bylaw through today, as long as it still allows for amendments, changes, and for input, whether it be Brad Creek or Con, which then, you know, I can go either way. But again, it's more about communicating with our constituents and making them part of the process.
Mr. Reeve,
sorry. Councillor McKeiler, I'm going to say that we've got two items here by the sounds of things, Conrich water and Brad Creek water, that are challenging to a couple of councillors. So make a motion to leave them the way they're at and take the rest of the bylaw ahead. But we don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Mr. Reeman.
Mr. Chair, all I was going to offer all of council is the rates that we are providing to you today under this master rates bylaw are still going down the path that we are subsidizing some of these systems. Bright Creek water and wastewater is still being subsidized by county tax dollars. We know that because this is still a premature system. We don't have all the customers we intended to set out. Other systems within the county, for example, the Langdon sewage system that the county owns, it is now taking its turn that we're actually not subsidizing that anymore because the rates are at the point where we're doing what council has asked us to do under their mandate, which is be user pay and making sure that we're not subsidizing all these systems by tax support. So again, we're not trying to go 100% recovery on these systems. We're trying to make progressive steps, knowing full well we'll get more customers, and hopefully there's a balance for what we're raising the rates to when we see enough users that we are no longer tax supporting these systems.
Thank you for that. Councillor McKeiler.
I just wanted to ask through the reeve if we've had public consultation in any master rates process before, or specifically as it relates to water utilities in the past. Like, have we done that?
Through the chair to Councillor McKeiler, I wouldn't say formally no, but I would suggest each one of you have had informal input on from your residents on all of the rates that are affected or that affect the residents. So, but formally, no, we don't generally take this out like a offsite levy bylaw. We just, it's just not that, it's not that nature of a bylaw.
So then the feedback we receive informally, then what's our mechanism to make sure that feedback is entered into the system and that's reflected if appropriate in what's being proposed in the master rate bylaw? Does that make sense? Oh, hesitation.
Could I help you there? I think that is where the councillor gets the information from your residents and you bring it forward and you ask questions in this format. So once we get this vote either one way or the other, if we're going to continue on, then you have questions you can ask on the behalf of your residents. And that's the same with every subject other than public hearings. So they are allowed to contact the councillor and say, I've got an issue with the water rates in Bragg Creek. Bring this up. I want to know why. And we just heard we're subsidizing them already, so we're trying to get to cost recovery. Anyway,
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I was just going to add specific to Bright Creek. Back when we started the system and the development of the system through the government grant, through the flood grant program that we had, there was extensive consultation on the actual construction of the system, making sure that we were going to gain customers and the rate structure and how successful we needed to be in terms of gaining customers to make sure that the rate structure stayed the same. Those were all part of the conversations. But it was always very clear that as the county continues to look at these systems, we have to make sure we're following the mandate, which is making sure we're not tax supporting these systems to the point where it's a deficit to other entities in the county.
Councillor Hanson.
So a lot of what we were looking for public input on is probably just good business decision making in terms of how we subsidize, how we split our fees, how do we bridge infrastructure such that it can happen and wait for build out to catch up to it. If we aren't careful, we can potentially be subsidizing for the wrong purposes. You're supposed to subsidize to promote a wanted behavior. But let's say their costs are high because of what they're dumping down the drain or bad water management practices for the intake. By subsidizing them, you're just continuing to drive bad behavior. So we have to be very, very careful in what we're actually doing here and not be bullied by people that just want not to pay so much for their water, say, at the expense of the rest of Rocky View. You have trees. You don't need cheap water. Or I'm going to want some subsidy to plow my 27 kilometers of private trails in my community.
Councillor Hinn.
My whole deal with this is not so much about subsidies or anything like that. It's just comparing what our old master rates bylaw was to the proposed and having some time to absorb it and learn about it. I'm not saying we need a full-day workshop on the whole deal, but just personally, I'm not prepared to vote in favor of this just because I don't understand it well enough. So I would propose a motion to stay with the 2017 or whatever the old bylaw was until we have a better understanding of what the new bylaw entails and, you know, percentage of increases and why and all the rest of it.
So is that a formal motion? No, he's saying staying with the 2017 master rates bylaw.
Which Mr. Chair, essentially, yeah. If I may, Mr. Chair, essentially that's what that motion does, is it doesn't replace the 2017 bylaw.
Councillor Comanche.
Through the Reeve, just for the record, I am not asking for subsidies because I believe that, you know, whether you're a developer or anyone coming through, you're responsible for what you bring to our community. In its simplest form, all I'm asking is that, you know, I, with regards to my residents, get to speak to them one-on-one and maybe with Byron, one last kick at the can. Let these people know that we, as their councillors and administration, do, you know, care about these things. There's a reason why. I think just that fact that you get a small group perpetuating falsehoods about why their rates are going up, because I know, yeah, we're underutilized, things cost that much, but again, it's just about some public information and getting it straight from us.
Councillor Shule, to close.
Okay, I wasn't, maybe that was a bad word, a choice of word, at the subsidizing, but all I was saying is that I think we need more time to digest, and I really would like to hear from the residents on different issues. And secondly, just so people would understand, I was in council before when a lot of this things happened in Brad Creek, and a lot of it got really forced on the Brad Creek area for some of those water, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't think it's fair that all of a sudden the residents of the area be hold the full brunt of a lot of this stuff. So I think there needs to be a lot more information on this here, and I definitely would like to hear from residents. So I'm going to stick with my motion, see where it goes, and if not, somebody can bring another one.
Okay. I am going to call the question. All in favor? And recorded vote. We'll start with Councillor Comanche.
In favor.
Opposed.
Opposed.
I'm opposed.
In favor.
I think in favor.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
And that carries. Can I get a motion to go back in camera?
Motion to go back in camera for K2, K3. That council, that council move in camera to consider the in-camera report, BREC real estate purchase agreement status update, and a personnel matter pursuant to the following sections of the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act. Section 17, disclosure of harmful to personal privacy. Section 21, disclosure harmful to intergovernmental relations. And section 24, advice from officials.
All in favor? And we are back in to order. And I need a motion to go out of camera. Councillor Shule.
I'll make a motion to go out of camera for K2 and K3, I believe.
Do you have public support for that motion?
I will. I'll ask for it.
All in favor? Can we get the motion for K2 put up, please?
He's working on it.
You're going to do this motion too?
Do you want me to do them both?
This is K2, then we'll do K3 after. Comes after K2.
Us?
Councillor Henn.
Good job, you're the read.
Regarding item K2, I move that administration be directed to execute the real estate purchase agreement for the sale of the 12-acre plus or minus portion of fee simple land legally described as plan 7191JK, parcel A, to the Bow River Edge Campground Society. What are you laughing at?
JK means society.
Okay. And that the in-camera report, BREC real estate purchase agreement status update, discussions and any related articles remain confidential, and attachments are considered advice from administration and could be harmful to intergovernmental relations. As a result, they are protected from disclosure under Sections 21 and 24 of the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act.
Thank you. All in favor? That is carried. Councillor Kissel.
I move that the report and in-camera discussion on RVC 2018-07 be held in confidence pursuant to the following sections of the Freedom of Information and Protection Act. Section 17, disclosure harmful to personal privacy. Section 19, confidential evaluations. And that the REEV be authorized to proceed on the personnel matter based on the mandate received in camera in the confidential report, RVC 2018-07.
Thank you. All in favor? Whoops, hang on. It's okay to combine those two motions, is it not? Yep. Okay, can you give up the mic, Councillor Kissel?
Just Deputy like to Reeve. Make a friendly motion, sorry, through the REEV. It just said, and that the REEV and Deputy REEV be authorized. Just a friendly motion, or friendly amendment.
I accept the friendly motion.
Okay, all in favor? And that is carried. We need one more motion.
I would like to make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you. All in favor? Thank you. Thank you to staff for...